using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it is Monday, March the 29th, year of our Lord, 2021, day 380 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to have as a guest Phelim McAleer, previously produced Gosnell, and he is fundraising for a program about the corruption, entertainment film. It's not a documentary, it's an entertaining film about the Biden family. He'll be coming on in the third hour. Stay with us, we'll be right back. All right, today we'll begin with something that I think is a great metaphor for what has happened to our country this last year and is continuing to happen to our country. Began under Trump, continues under Biden. We have the U.S. stealth jet. This is the F-35. This program is notorious for the kind of bloat and failure that has come to characterize our bloated, failing federal government. $1.6 trillion for this program. Each of these planes cost $130 million. And you may have seen this, a U.S. stealth jet, the F-35, accidentally shot itself. This is happening in America, but it's not by accident in America. That's the only difference where this metaphor breaks down. But it is typical of the suicidal waste of our government, of the belligerent evil, of our endless, unprovoked foreign wars that have now been brought home as a evil domestic war, beginning with sanctions against the American people. But specifically what happened with this, it was on a training mission over Yuma, Arizona. An externally mounted 25-millimeter cannon fired, sends out a high-explosive incendiary tracer rounds. They discharged and exploded after leaving the fighter's cannon. So it's not clear whether just fired it off by itself, or whether the pilot released that. And again, today, as we look at the former CDC director, Robert Redfield, talking about the Wuhan virus now coming out of the lab, and we're going to talk about that. Why is he saying that now? Why is he saying that now? And does it matter whether that was fired accidentally or whether it was released deliberately? Either way, we know what's involved now, and I believe that this is another effort to raise and continue fear and panic, just as the talk last year raised fear and panic. Not that you shouldn't be concerned about something that you don't know, but I was very suspicious about this from the very beginning, based on what we were told to do. This looks very much like it's being used for an agenda. And that's exactly what it was being used for. And so we'll take a look at that today. But getting back to this, I said it wasn't clear if this was fired deliberately, or was it accidentally, or was it a failure of technology? The F-35 is the most advanced fifth-generation fighter jet in the world. Oh, is it? Is it? Can it fly? There are some questions about that. Plagued with hundreds of issues. All right, Zero Hedge, the 25-millimeter gun that is in question here on the stealth jet has had accuracy problems hitting ground targets, but evidently it doesn't have any accuracy problem hitting itself. When the F-35, here's some of the problems that have been listed via Defense News. When the F-35 vertically lands on very hot days, older engines may be unable to produce the required thrust to keep the jet airborne, resulting in a hard landing. Oh, well, that might do more than just $2.5 million worth of damage, which is what this one round did to the plane. After doing certain maneuvers, the F-35, pilots are not always able to completely control the aircraft's pitch, roll, and yaw. That's all of the different aspects of the plane. There's three different ways that you can control it, and you may lose control of all three of those. Supersonic flight in excess of Mach 1.2, that's 1.2 times the speed of sound, can cause structural damage and blistering to the stealth coating on the plane. Oops, there we go. So if we go fast, we lose our stealth coating. Cabin pressure spikes in the cockpit have been known to cause barotrauma, extreme ear and sinus pains. In other words, pressure trauma, barometric pressure. The spare parts inventory shown by the F-35's logistics system does not always reflect reality, causing occasional mission cancellations. Can't keep the spare parts going. I mean, this is a $1.6 trillion program. If the F-35 blows a tire upon landing, the impact could also take out both hydraulic lines and pose a loss of aircraft risk. Well, that might also cause a loss of pilot. But see, they don't really care about that. Their money is in the $130 million plane. That's more important than the pilot to them. Another example of our government at work. Possible maneuvering issues when the aircraft is operating above a 20-degree angle of attack. That's not really that high. 20 degrees is really not that steep. The F-35's logistics system currently has no way for foreign F-35 operators to keep their secret data from being sent to the United States. Oh, well, see, that's not a bug, that's a feature. See, we want to be able to know everything about everybody, including the people that we sell our weapons to. It's very much like what Huawei wants to do with 5G or what America wants to do with its 5G system. Either way, pick who you would like to be your information master. Would you like to have the U.S. spying on everything that you do or the Chinese spying on everything that you do and being able to shut down your infrastructure based on 5G? Yeah, this is exactly where we are. But here's the domestic application of this from Politico. Just listen to the headline. Be aware. The Pentagon's target list for extremist infiltrators, both right and left. See, people like Politico and Glenn Greenwald are starting to realize that this weapon that is being crafted right now, this surveillance state, this police state, the biometric surveillance, the passports to go anywhere or do anything domestically, have to have permission to get into the public square. That's where it's going. They're starting to realize that this isn't something that's just going to be for people on the right. No, no, no. They've got a shopping list for everybody. Everybody. And no cost is too great. And self-inflicted wounds are just fine. Yeah, that's exactly where we are today. So let's take a quick look at how we're getting there. You know, we've had a mass psychological, behavioral psychological pandemic. It is a panic-demic. It is fear. And that's what we're going to talk about when we get to Redfield, about the fear factor that is being ginned up here. And they're still going with it. They're still pushing the fear. They want to push the fear for vaccines. You got a lot of businesses saying that the vaccine is the way that we calm people down now, that we get over the fear. And it's like, no, because they won't work. And the real issue that they don't understand is that this is not a pandemic. What is happening to us with the tranny agenda is not tolerance. This is deliberate insanity that is being sold to control us. It is an exercise in behavioral psychology as to what you will put up with. And we're seeing, as this is rolling out everywhere, in every country, there's not any government, conservative or liberal, who is willing to push back against this. It will have to be done by the citizens. And it will remain in place until the citizens have had enough. A retired Supreme Court justice in the UK who has been speaking out about the insane, egregious attacks on civil liberties in the name of the pandemic has said this will probably last another 10 years. He said the politicians will tell me privately that they don't believe this, but they aren't going to risk their career opposing it. just like we heard in Canada, Doug Ford saying, it'd be political suicide to go up against these medical dictators. He didn't call them medical dictators, but that's what they are. They're the experts. I can't oppose them. I'm not going to risk my political career. See, we have a bunch of sheep. A bunch of blind sheep leading other blind sheep. We don't have anybody as a leader who has any integrity. They will go along until the mob does something. And this is both a bug and a feature. These people are so afraid of public opinion that if you stood up and demanded your freedom back in sufficient numbers and did it consistently, these sheep who are our leaders would cave. But let's talk a little bit about the agenda behind all of this. And as an introduction, just to remind you that although these people may be crazy, they're also very dangerous.
Watching me, well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
All right, and the latest example of this is the appeals court, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, has now ruled in favor of a professor who is a professor of Christian thought, of Christian history, who lost his job a couple of years ago. And back in 2018, it's taken a while for this to roll through. Finally, you've had some judges make the appropriate decision. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday ruled in favor of a devout Christian professor who was disciplined because he, quote, refused to refer to students by their preferred pronouns. I mean, after all, isn't that a harmless thing? You know, you just play along with these people, right? There was a 2016 directive in a small state university in Ohio that ordered him to do so. The court held that the university officials and lower federal district court failed to recognize a professor's First Amendment rights to free speech and to the free exercise of his religion. By so holding, the court decried the notion that a university might, quote, wield alarming power to compel ideological conformity, unquote. Okay, it's a good decision. When are we going to also take a look at, let's say, health conformity as well? Medical conformity. Doing exactly what big pharmaceutical companies demand of you. Well, we should look at that as well. But it's the ideological conformity that is really at the core of this. And it is essential that we get back our ability to be able to speak sanely and to have tolerance again. Nicholas Merriweather, the professor, quote, strives to live out his faith each day, read the Sixth Circuit Court's opinion. As such, quote, his religious convictions influence how he thinks about human nature, about marriage, about gender, about sexuality, about morality, about politics, and about social issues, unquote. They go on to say that Merriweather believes that, quote, God created human beings as either male or female, that this sex is fixed in each person from the moment of conception and that it cannot be changed, regardless of an individual's feelings or desires. And the college is Shawnee State University. I'll mention that again, because if you have any students and you're of a mind to send them to college in 2021. I mean, it's not just the attacks on the mind and the spirit of the kids. It's also the attacks on their bodies that you're going to see. You're going to wind up paying your tuition, as we saw this last year. Oh, come on back to class. And then it is absolute physical tyranny after the tyranny over the minds of men and women that we've been seeing over the last year. But if you are still thinking of sending your kid to any school, Shawnee State University, you might want to stay away from this one. We'll go into a little bit of the details there, because this is unfortunately Shawnee State University is not an exception anymore. It's more like the rule. And they decided that they will rule every aspect of your life. They will bring you into submission. He had worked there for 25 years. He taught courses in philosophy, religion, ethics, and the history of Christian thought. So this is a Christian professor teaching about the history of Christian thought. No wonder they wanted to get rid of him. The court described his superior, Jennifer Pauley, as, quote, derisive and scornful. According to the court, Pauley told Meriwether that, quote, Christians are primarily motivated out of fear and they should be banned from teaching courses concerning that religion. So as a Christian, you're not qualified to teach about Christianity because Christianity, she says, is motivated out of fear. It's evil. And so we need to get people who are not Christians to teach against this evil that she perceives. Though the university's policy was announced in 2016, his troubles began later. In January of 2018, he referred to a student known only in the pinyin as Jane Doe. Jane Doe is biologically male. He referred to Jane as Sir. He said, no one would have assumed that Doe was female based on Doe's outward appearance. After class, Doe approached Meriwether and demanded that Meriwether refer to Doe as a woman and use feminine titles and pronouns. This was the first time Meriwether learned that Doe identified as a woman. So Meriwether paused before responding because his sincerely held religious beliefs prevented him from communicating messages about gender identity that he believes are false. This, by the way, is from the opinion. He explained that he wasn't sure if he could comply with Doe's demands. Doe became hostile, circling around Meriwether at first and then approaching him in a threatening manner. I guess this means I can call you, and then he called him a very unattractive name. Anyway, Doe promised that Meriwether would be fired if he didn't give in to Doe's demands. Dean Milliken went to Meriwether's office the next day. She advised him that he eliminate all sex-based references from his expression. No using of he or she or him or her, Mr. and Ms., and so on. Meriwether pointed out that eliminating pronouns altogether was next to impossible, especially when teaching. So he proposed a compromise. He would use pronouns to address most students in class, but would refer to Doe using only Doe's last name. Dean Milliken accepted this compromise, apparently believing that it followed the university's gender identity policy, but that didn't last for long. The student, who continued to attend class, complained again, and the university told Meriwether that he would be forced to call the student a female, the opinion states. Meriwether continued to call the student by, and this is coming from lawandcrime.com, they say Meriwether continued calling the student by her last name. It's a male. It's a male. His last name. I'm not playing that game either. He slipped up once, but corrected himself. The student remained in class and received a high grade for very good work and frequent participation in class discussions. In subsequent meetings, then Provost Jeffrey Bauer, quote, exhibited deep hostility to both Meriwether and a union representative who intervened on the professor's behalf. From the opinion, states, the union representative tried to explain the teachings of Meriwether's church and why Meriwether felt that he was being compelled to affirm positions at odds with his faith. So we have a hierarchy here. This is intersectionality. Different groups are above other groups. And some beliefs trump your freedom of thought, your freedom of religion, your God-given rights specifically protected in the Constitution. But hey, this is a private organization. Can't they do whatever they want? See, this is the argument being made on social media. The court says no in the university, and they're right. And the court has said no to people controlling speech in the public square, corporations controlling speech in the public square when they owned it completely. 1946, Marsh versus Alabama. They were right about that. Republicans and Democrats, conservative and libertarian think tanks like the Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, are absolutely wrong about freedom of speech and private organizations' ability to take that away from you. If you accept that, private organizations can take away your freedom of religion as well. And you can have health bureaucrats who take away your ability to walk around in the public square as well. This is where we are now. All these issues are tied together. It is total. It is totalitarian, and it seeks to control not only everything about your life, but also your thoughts. Getting back to the opinion. The union representative tried to explain this. At one point during the hearing, Provost Bauer openly laughed. Indeed, Bauer was so hostile that the union representative was, quote, not able to present the grievance. And so Bauer then denied the grievance. You know, when we look at this and where we are, let me give you an example. This is from Doug Wilson, just so that you understand where we are with this. You have to understand, this is not crazy. These people are not crazy. They are exercising their power over you. And so Doug Wilson understands exactly what is happening here. And I want you to hear his analysis. Here's Doug Wilson of Canon Press.
When we're recording this, we're right in the midst of canceling Dr. Seuss. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Surely that's going to do it. Everybody's going to wake up and say, this is beyond, this is absurd, this is lunatic. And I've given up saying that, you know, surely now everybody's going to see the light. Now, having given up saying that, that doesn't mean that that won't happen. Mm-hmm. It just means that people can probably go for longer than you would guess mm-hmm. in doubling down, tripling down on their folly. People cannot live this way. There's going to be either a revolt against it, right, and a revolt back to normalcy, mm-hmm. or the people who are doing all this crazy are simply doing it as a means of getting control, right? Mm-hmm. And then once they have that control, then they can back off a little bit, having gotten all the levers of control. Basically, cancel culture is not rampaging through North Korea right now. Mm-hmm. Right? They just have an iron grip on the country, and you do what you tell them, and your freedoms are gone. Mm-hmm. But they're not doing. It's not a. It's a totalitarian society, but it's not a loony bin. Mm-hmm. Okay, right now we're dealing with the loony bin. The inmates are running the asylum, and that's because we're living in a transitional moment. Political correctness, cancel culture, and political correctness are all designed to be absurd. The people who are yelling at us about those things are serious, but they're not serious about the point they're making. What they're doing is they are saying things that are absurd. They know that they're absurd. Mm-hmm. And the issue is, can they get you to go along with the absurdity? Mm-hmm. Because if you go along with the absurd demands that they're making, then that is demonstrating that they have complete control over you. So we think that the issue is about trannies, mediocre males competing in women's sports. We think that that's the issue. And we think we're debating with someone who actually thinks that these guys are girls. Mm-hmm. We're not debating with people who think that guys are girls. We're debating with people who think that you're a girl. Augustine, I think it was Augustine's phrase for it was libido dominandi, the lust to govern. Mm-hmm. And it's you see it in Milton's Satan, who would rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. Mm. Okay, there are people who would rather govern a helicopter crash of a country mm-hmm. than serve in a happy, prosperous nation where they didn't get to run anybody.
So the trick is then that when you run into these absurd conversations, we keep thinking that they're trying to convince us of this other truth that seems ridiculous. But in actuality, what they're trying to convince us of is their right to be the one who declares what is true.
Correct. No matter what. They want me to acknowledge that they are in that definitional place. Mm-hmm. So I've said it for a number of years. I said all of this is battle, is a battle over control of the dictionary. Mm-hmm. Who has control of the dictionary? Who is the editor of the dictionary? And I'm not arguing with their definition of XYZ. Mm-hmm. I'm arguing with their right to define anything.
And that's why. So 1 minute race means one thing, the next minute something else, or gender or sex. And it keeps changing on us, not because they're trying to get us to a particular truth, but because they're trying to establish.
Yes. And this is the truth that Orwell pointed to. We've always been at war with East Asia.
Right.
And so I can guarantee you that when after all the soft Christians have capitulated and say, yes, trannies are women. Yes, mm-hmm. trannies are women. Trannies are women. And they're in the driver's seat. They're going to come back to us 15 minutes later and say, now, we want you to deny that trannies are women.
That's right. That's exactly what they're going to do. And we've already seen this, by the way. Doug didn't mention this, so I've mentioned this in the past. Take a look at what they were telling everybody in order to get gay marriage. There's a gay gene. It's biological. It's not mental. It's biological. And then as they get gay marriage, now it's no longer biological. Gender is now in your mind. You see how they switch this? I mean, they've already done exactly what he said they're going to do, because that's the way this is. Sexual preference is biological. No, now it's in my mind. Now it's all in my mind. Even my gender is in my mind. And since it's in my mind, I have my choice of fantasy genders. I don't know which one of the 50 I'm going to be today, but whichever one I am, you're going to have to pretend and play along with me, like Marie Antoinette's Tea Party. And we have seen their effort to define the terms. And I've talked about this a long time. I said, look at what the Associated Press does with their terms that they put out, their style sheets for people who are writing articles, people in journalism. They say, don't use the term illegal alien. Use the term undocumented worker, right? Don't use the term anchor baby. Use the term children of undocumented immigrants, that type of thing. They play this game a long time, but we've also given into this game. Back in the 1960s, everybody knew that red was the color of communism, right? Better dead than red was what everybody was saying in the 1960s, at least everybody that I hung around with. I didn't hang around Bill Ayers. So those of us who didn't hang around with Bill Ayers were saying better dead than red. But then a few years ago, the media decided that they were going to make red the color of the people who were opposed to communism. And the people who were opposed to communism went along with it. And so now here in the United States, this is the only country now where red represents the conservative party, right? We're the red states now. We comply with the labels of the, but that may seem like a small thing, and it is. But see, that had absolutely no consequences, really, except to call themselves something that they aren't and to call you something that you aren't, to muddy the water, to confuse where they're coming from. Because if they were to assign themselves red, it would have been too obvious that these people are Marxists, which is what they are. So the Marxists who have always adopted the color red give that color to their opponents, and we play along with it. We embrace that. We make caps out of that. We name our publications Red State and so on. And we always do it in the media. See, they get to define the terms. Whether it is something as simple as colors, or whether it is using particular semantics. And this goes back to calling themselves liberals. Liberal used to be a good thing. Liberal used to be somebody who supported liberty. And then it got co-opted by the Marxists. See how that works? So, same thing with progress. Progress is a good thing. Well, the progressives took that over. And so if we let them define the terms, this is where we are. And they didn't stop at that now. Now they're defining everything. And this is designed, as he pointed out, to be absurd. Just to see if they can get you to go along. Because this is simply about their overwhelming desire to govern you, to control you in every respect. And this is why we must refuse. The COVID-19 pandemic has taken thought policing and wokeness to a whole new level. And not even religion is sacred anymore. This is an op-ed piece on RT by Rachel Marsden. She said, "What's the link between vaccine militancy, COVID jab passports, and a woke Church of Sweden theologian suggesting that Christians should accept Prophet Muhammad out of quote-unquote respect for Muslims?" Let me tell you. For years now, Western society has been on a slippery slope toward total rejection of the old philosophy of live and let live. It all seemed to start innocently enough. Social justice warriors advocated in favor of tolerance, of diversity. Well, that's fair enough, right? But we believe in tolerance and we believe in diversity. Problem is, they don't believe in either of those values. They will not tolerate your belief. And they don't want a diversity of opinions. Everyone must agree with them. And if you don't agree with them, you're now purged or canceled. What reasonable person wouldn't have a problem? With people being able to live their own life as they see fit, as long as it did not impede on anyone else. And that's the whole idea. It's not designed for individual liberty. This is not about individual liberty. This is about one group dominating another group. It's about putting people into groups, not treating them as individuals, and then ranking those groups and having one group dominate the others. But most of all, it's about getting the groups pitted against each other. This is why you have to give up this partisanship that's taken over our politics. It's absolutely death to the public square. Political parties, as our founders point out, are antithetical to individual liberty. And we've never seen America more partisan than it is today. And we've never seen individual liberty more threatened than it is today. Anyway, Rachel goes on to say, the next step was to advocate beyond simple tolerance in favor of the policing and rejection of any thoughts that diverged from theirs. That's the pivot right there. It was a view of social justice warriors that everyone should be able to call themselves what they wish. He, him, she, her, vive, zizem, zerzi, whatever, right? Have the right to dictate how others view them. So now this is exerting control over other people's minds. And now this is no longer about individual liberty. Those lacking the bandwidth to wrap their minds around this new language system have been able to sidestep it by simply referring to people by their name, for example, which is what that story of the Christian professor just did. Well, let me try to avoid using any pronouns or titles when I refer to you. Let me just call you by your last name. A lot of people do this with Levine, the man who dresses like a woman, who is now the Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services. I refuse to call him a woman. I refuse to call him Rachel. He's not Rachel. He's Norman Bates, and you better understand how dangerous he is to your liberties, to your children, pushing this kind of pedophile agenda in a very high position in Washington. This is where these people are. We must not cave to this. We must not be ashamed to tell the truth. Why are we ashamed of the truth? It's clear. You know, the emperor has no clothes. And these trannies do not become a different sex by the way they dress. It's just that simple. Literally, nothing is sacred anymore, not even a religion. Earlier this month, a theologian of the Church of Sweden suggested that Christians could accept Prophet Muhammad in the interest of a greater respect for Muslims, apparently seeking to treat centuries-old institutions like they're a Marvel-DC crossover, akin to having Spider-Man and Superman team up. If you say that, you're disregarding both Islam and Christianity. You have no idea what those two are about. The COVID-19 pandemic has taken the militant policing of others' thoughts and behaviors to a whole new level. Anyone making their own decisions about their life amidst this global fiasco has been shamed for wrongthink in a page straight out of George Orwell's 1984. And you are essentially executed for thought crime. Right now, they're not physically executing people, but you get terminated. That's a euphemism used by the state, especially the surveillance state. Terminate your enemies there, opposing spies. Well, you get terminated from your job, right? It's not uncommon for workers nowadays to be fired from their jobs if the company feels the individual has violated what it considers to be proper conduct, which is what we were just talking about. And I'm glad to see one court stand up to that. Now, from there, it'll go to the Supreme Court. Do you think that the Supreme Court, even with the three Trump appointees, do you think that they will apply the law correctly, the principles that America was founded on correctly? Do you think they will? Do you think they'll stand for freedom of thought and speech and independence? Because they're not standing for that when it comes to actual speech. If they don't stand for freedom of speech, they're not going to stand for freedom of religion, and we're not seeing, and all of the rest of the freedoms are falling like dominoes. So that was an unusual decision. That really is kind of a man bites dog. It was a, you want a man bites dog? It's like the feds at some level, at some branch of government, upheld the Bill of Rights and individual liberty. That's a real man-bites-dog story right there. Going back to the RT op-ed piece, now we're starting to see these same militant sanitary authoritarians waiting to dictate to others whether they should be forced to be vaccinated. And let me add this. I haven't said this before. But if understand, you know, we have a lot of people very concerned about the fertility aspects of this and medical aspects that are not tested. You had the former vice president of CEO, former VP, not CEO, of Pfizer, who said that he was very concerned about how this vaccine was going to be attacking proteins that were used to develop placenta and that it might result in infertility. Pfizer seemed to agree with their warning labels, but he's now been vilified for saying that. But you should be concerned about all kinds of effects of these vaccines. Sterility and population control are just one of them. And the long-term effects, and we've never seen a vaccine before that have this kind of horrific short-term effect. About 4,000 people reported dead within a short period of time in Europe, about 2,000 in the U.S. in just a couple of months. But understand that if they can force you to be vaccinated, you want to talk about, well, maybe this vaccine causes infertility. If they can force you to be vaccinated, if they can force you to take anything that big pharmaceutical companies or that Fauci or the CDC or any of these bureaucrats or Bill Gates, who controls the NGOs like the World Health Organization that are pushing this globally, if they can force you to take a vaccine, it's the same as forcing you to be sterilized. They can force sterilization. They don't have to do it subversively. If they have the authority to force you to take a vaccine, they have the authority to force you into sterilization for the greater good of the village, of course, right? We have to, we've got limited resources, and we need to make sure that we have those resources are taken care of. So we may have to just force sterilize you because, after all, the human race is a virus, according to the environmentalists. We're killing this rare sentient being, Mother Earth, Gaia, they say. We're a virus, so we should be subject to forced sterilization. It's the same principle I've said all along about medication from the FDA. If they can say to you that certain therapeutics and drugs, and especially natural remedies, are prohibited, and the only thing that you're allowed to take are what they expressly permit. Everything is prohibited unless expressly permitted. See, they can, if they can, I said this long before they started talking about forced vaccination. I said, if they can prohibit you from taking medicine that you would like to take because you've done your research, then they can force you to take medication that you don't want to take because you've done your research. And that's where we are. If they can force you to take a vaccine that you're concerned might sterilize you, they can force you to be sterilized because you no longer have any individual rights. You no longer have the idea that these people say they support. My body, my choice. No, no, no. That's not on the table anymore. Religion may be declining in the USA, says the RT op-ed piece, but religiosity is on the rise. Only this time the zealots are for politics. This is Hillary Clinton's perspective. She talked for a long time about the politics of meaning for her and the people that she was controlling. For her, it's about controlling other people. It is the lust to govern, to dominate other people. But what she was selling her followers was that they could have meaning in their life in politics. That's why she talked about the politics of meaning. I'll give you meaning in your life. You just follow me. That's the church that she was selling. It was a cult, still is a cult. But now that cult has been bought into by conservatives as well. They find meaning in Trump. They find meaning in MAGA. Instead of following Obama or instead of following Hillary, they follow Trump. That gives meaning to their life. And that is the essence of the idolatry. That gold statue that they were parading around at CPAC. It's a bit of a joke. What's not a joke is how distressed people are that their guy is not in power in Washington, as if he is going to save them. The same thing we saw with the despair that we saw in the Trump derangement syndrome. Now a Trump rearrangement syndrome. People who excuse everything that Trump did and still want to believe that he embraces their values that they project onto him. And that there is meaning in following a man. In following a man. Rutgers University is setting the tone for the next school year by requiring students to be vaccinated in order to attend. Will others do the same thing? Yes, of course they will. How about mass transit, or gyms, or libraries, or restaurants, or movie theaters, or shopping malls, or swimming pools? We are currently witnessing the beginning of the segregation of society based on vaccination. And it will be to the detriment of anyone who is skeptical about turning their body over to Big Pharma, lest they find themselves barred from what most would consider to be a normal life. Think about this. In Israel, as they are coming down hard on the people who do not want to be vaccinated, we see signs that say, these restrooms in this store are for the vaccinated only. You could go in, perhaps, if you wear a mask, and you don't have your vaccination card, but maybe you're wearing a mask, and maybe they took your temperature, and maybe they stuck a long probe up your nose that's got who knows what on it, and hope that they don't stick it too far. Because that is a very dangerous area to stick the probe up that far. But, you know, you could still get into the store, but not into the restroom unless you're vaccinated. And so many of them have said this is a program for apartheid. It is a program, you could call it apartheid, you could call it the Jim Crow laws. This is, we've been down this road before, there's nothing new about this whatsoever. And there is nobody in your beloved Republican Party that is going to stand against what the Democrats want to do. The difference between the two parties is that one of them tells you what their agenda is, the other one sneaks it and stabs you in the back. So you're going to find yourself barred from normal life, and yet there are people who are cheering for exactly that. The mere thought of people who think and behave differently to them is intolerable. The authoritarian policing of other people's lives, the sort of extremism that used to be relegated to science fiction, is now a fait accompli. This is why we must refuse to comply with any of this. We must refuse to use their language. We must refuse to use their terms. We must refuse to live their lies. Home Depot. They thought Home Depot was conservative, and they do give more money to the Republicans than Democrats. They give twice as much money to Republicans as they did to Democrats. But, you know, being a giant corporation, Home Depot has a political action committee. A political action committee. This is what makes Home Depot essential. This is why Home Depot was allowed to stay open, Lowe's and other places like that, the big box retailers. They're allowed to stay open while the middle class is shut down because the middle class doesn't have a political action committee. And everything now in America is doled out by political privilege, just as it is in China, just as it has been in every authoritarian, fascist, communist country. Home Depot generally leans conservative. In 2018, they gave $1.3 million to Republicans, $750,000 to Democrats. A right-leaning nonprofit that ranks companies by ideology ranks Home Depot between neutral and leans conservative. Yet the Home Depot Foundation partnered with the Georgia Center for Nonprofits in sponsoring a diversity resource hub that pushes the idea of systemic racism, supports the 1619 Project curriculum. If ever there was a war, a lie that was designed to create a war between different groups in America, the New York Post, the New York Times, 1619 Project, exactly that. They endorse the accusation that mainstream conservatives and Christian nonprofits are really hate groups to be listed alongside the Ku Klux Klan. All right, we're going to take a look at some updates and news here. We're going to take a quick break. And, you know, while we're talking about the rollout now, we're now in the propaganda stage. And we're having a massive propaganda campaign that's being rolled out. The Ad Council given $250 million. And so I'm just going to remind you, we're going to play a few, as we take breaks today, we're going to be playing some commercials that will remind you of just how reliable TV commercials are, as you're going to be faced with a barrage, $250 million worth of TV commercials for your safety. All right, let's go, roll a commercial, Travis.
How often does your job call you out of bed in the middle of the night? Well, if you were a doctor, it would be often, and generally there isn't much time to spare.
Coffee, Doctor?
Oh, fine. Have a Camel with your coffee.
Thanks.
You know, this night work's kind of rough, isn't it?
That's right. But a Camel's always a pleasure.
Yes, folks, the pleasing mildness of a Camel is just as enjoyable to a doctor as it is to you or me. In a nationwide survey, doctors in all branches of medicine were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, Doctor?" The brand named most was Camel's. Tens of thousands of doctors, general practitioners, surgeons, specialists, doctors in every branch of medicine were included. And according to this nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Try Camels yourself, the cigarette so many doctors enjoy.
Has your news been censored, banned? Censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. Yes, I played the Doctors Prefer Camels commercial. And when I was a child, that's what we were told. They're great for you. And you're going to have that same type of commercial right now. They use the authority figures. Right? These are doctors. They know. And, of course, nobody dropped dead smoking a cigarette. Those things took a while to show up. So that's the type of pressure they're now going to put on us. But, of course, What we see happening with the vaccine passports is even worse. This shows you what their true agenda is. New York has now rolled out the Excelsior Pass. It is the nation's first vaccine passports. And understand, they're already talking about doing this on all flights, international and domestic. You have to comply with the mask right now. That is the placeholder for the vaccine because, you know, the mask doesn't protect you. It protects other people. The vaccine doesn't protect you. It protects other people. They're exactly the same thing. And that is all nonsense. If the mask protected other people, it would also protect you as well. And the vaccine, this whole insanity is simply about control. But take a look at what they're doing here with this. This is a passport now, not to travel on a plane. We've already acknowledged in the wake of 9/11 for the last 20 years, they've been gradually getting us to accept that they can keep us from flying for any type of reason. As a matter of fact, for no reason at all, they can put you on a no-fly list because they don't like your politics or because somebody accuses you in a secret proceeding. You're not allowed to know what those charges are. You're not allowed to know why you're on the no-fly list. You're not allowed to have a procedure to get off of the no-fly list. You're just there. You're just there. This is antithetical to everything that we have fought for in Western civilization and the entire concept of due process that's embodied in the Bill of Rights, the idea of a no-fly list. You don't know who's accusing you. You don't know what you're charged of. This is this kind of Kafkaesque situation. And of course, the Democrats want to apply that to gun ownership, so they have a no-buy list. And now they're going to the Excelsior Pass. Do you know where this came from? Do you know what Excelsior is? Before we had all of the different plastic bubbles, and before we had the styrofoam peanuts that get put into the packaging material, it was very common to package fragile items with very fine wood shavings that would be curled. And so that would give them a springiness. And so you'd put in a bunch of fine wood shavings into a box. Then you'd put your fragile item in there. Those fine wood shavings were called Excelsior. And so in a sense, what they're saying is if we're going to pack people in, these fragile snowflakes who are so concerned about their health, and of course we're very concerned about their health as well, if we're going to pack them into a box like Madison Square Garden, then we're going to accompany them by little pieces of paper to make sure that they can be safely packed together. These people know exactly what they're doing. Even the names that they use, Excelsior Pass, very carefully chosen. So if you want to go into large-scale venues, get packed together into Madison Square Garden, next week it'll be accepted at dozens of events, arts, and entertainment venues statewide, which means, by extension, that if you don't have your Excelsior Pass, you will be denied access to anywhere. They said to get the Excelsior Pass is very easy. Get a digital QR code, quick response, machine, readable label. You can just download the app, enter your name, date of birth, zip code, answer a series of personal questions to confirm your identity. The data will come from the state's vaccine registry. State vaccine registry. Let me ask the conservatives out there who are so concerned, and rightfully so, about gun registration. Gun registration. You should not have a list of gun owners. You should not have a list of people who have chosen or not chosen to get a particular medical procedure either. Why are people not concerned, as concerned about this as they are about the gun registry? It is the same thing. We get fixated on certain things, and we don't understand the principle involved here, but it's the same principle. So anyway, the data will come from the state's vaccine registry, which they've created. Just slip that in there. nothing to see there. Just move on. Also linked to testing data from a number of pre-approved testing companies. This is all built on top of IBM's Digital Health Pass platform. Yeah, the same people that created the Hollerith code so the Nazis could track their prisoners in the prison and concentration camps. Nothing really changes, does it? Except now they have changed the scope of the Nazi prison concentration camps, but still the same contractors there. And of course, you know, you have Klaus Schwab, that Nazi, born in Nazi Germany, raised in Nazi Germany, and now extending Nazi Germany tactics to the world. His organization, Davos, has this problem solved. I mean, you got this patchwork. You got IBM, you got Abbott Labs, you got a lot of different people out there, but the ones who have really thought this out, surprisingly, before all this stuff happened, Klaus Schwab and Davos, they've got common pass. They will keep the global database for everybody. I think that's where this is going to go. So, the new pass is part of a growing but disjointed effort to provide vaccine passports, quote unquote. See, now you have to have a passport to go into public accommodation or public spaces. Why is that? Why is that? Why are people not having a problem with this? I mean, this really is a form of apartheid and population control. And since it is a disjointed effort, we've got a patchwork of these things. We need to unify them. And so all of these governments are now pushing for a common location because it's going to be very confusing. We can't have a Tower of Babel solution for one world government, right? So we have to all speak the same language. And that's what they're consolidating here, going back to a Tower of Babel solution. They said IBM and many others have been developing such systems, as have retailers like Walmart, offering digital proof of vaccination to anyone who gets a shot in one of its pharmacies. Isn't that convenient? The biggest challenge will be linking these systems together so people won't need different apps for every venue or use. See, this is USA Today, and notice how they continually keep coming back to this. Well, we have all these different standards, and we just have to unify. And then they talk to Brian Behlendorf, executive director of Linux Foundation, who says this, quote, "It's really the nerds getting together in a kind of nerd UN to piece this all together." You know what you call a nerd UN? You know what you call a nerd United Nations? You call it a technocracy. You call it a global technocracy. Oh, he calls it a nerd UN. Amy Fairchild, dean of Ohio State University, a historian and an ethicist, said the biggest problem with these certifications will be cultural, not technological. So she doesn't see any liberty issue here. She doesn't see any constitutional issues. She doesn't see any privacy issues. She sees, how can we overcome these objections? Well, it's not a technological problem. You know, the nerd UN can make this all happen on a global basis. No, she says it's cultural. And by cultural, she means psychological. She said requiring vaccination is, quote, not something we've done before within this country outside of school systems and hospitals. This is why I vehemently opposed Donald Trump when that traitor in May of 2019 said, well, if they want to go to school, they just got to get the shots. That's it. They got to get the measles shots. I mean, we weren't locking down the whole country because of measles. As a matter of fact, statistically, you had a 0% chance of dying statistically with measles. There are known cases where somebody very, very, very rare, far more rare than the number and the severity of the rare diseases that people are contracting after these vaccines. Yes, it was possible, and some people had died, and they would be like, you know, this person, tell us about your child who died 30 years ago with measles, got some complications, some secondary infections, and died. And so then they would use that to push this, to tell everybody that they had to do it. And Donald Trump's response to that, after he'd gotten back from Davos in January 2019, was they just got to get the shot. So she said, this is something that we haven't done before in this country outside of school systems and hospitals. And it could eventually be expanded to cover flu and measles shots for everybody if public opinion would allow it. See, that's what she calls a cultural objection. And they believe that they can overcome this with the kinds of commercials like I just showed you. most doctors, and every area specialty prefer Camels to other leading brands of cigarettes. And so if we can get public opinion, and they know that they can shape public opinion, Edward Bernays, who was the guy who pretty much was the expert for Madison Avenue, had sold a war for Woodrow Wilson. He had fine-tuned propaganda way before Goebbels had it. They learned their lessons from Edward Bernays. And the Nazis were nothing compared to the kind of propaganda we get out of Madison Avenue. The goal would be to empower every individual on the planet to be able to collect information on their phone and expose that information to the right parties with consent, says Eric Fascini, Vice President of Emerging Business Networks for IBM. You notice how IBM, Bill Gates, always say that a global ID and having permission to do things empowers you? It's an empowering thing. You know, Gates looks at it and goes, the problem is most people on the globe don't have an ID. They need an ID to empower them. We need to empower them with a global ID. No, no, no. It's not empowerment. It's enslavement. They're enslaving people. Here's an example. As we see in the UK, Boris Johnson, formerly known, thought to be a conservative by some people, still head of the Conservative Party, says, no jab, no pub. And you have talk radio tweeting out, Hugh Osman, founder of Punch Taverns, says allowing pubs to demand vaccine passports is the most appalling idea and almost certainly illegal. It would be incredibly discriminatory against young people who haven't been offered the vaccine yet. Whoop, stop right there. Stop right there. You got to say that this is not simply a problem of this isn't fair because not everybody has a chance to get the vaccine. That argument's going to last just a couple of months. The argument that this is experimental and we should not be forced or coerced into taking an experimental drug or that the military is prohibited from demanding that, they can coerce and pressure people without demanding it. But let me tell you, it's just a wave of the hand by the FDA to make this experimental drug not experimental anymore. They did it under pressure. They gave it emergency use authorization under pressure from Donald Trump's White House. And they have waived all of their rules that they would normally do for approving a vaccine. It is, at minimum, a 2-year process for phase 3, not counting the others. They went phase 1, 2, 3 in 2 months. Phase 3 by itself is supposed to be a 2-year epidemiological study because you do not give somebody a vaccine for a condition and then expose them in a challenge test. And so they've already waived their rules to give it emergency use authorization. They can waive their rules to give it permanent authorization. So the idea that you're going to oppose this because it's experimental, or the idea that this isn't fair because young people don't have access to the vaccine yet because we don't have enough vaccines, you don't want to make that kind of argument. This is about who gets to make the decision. It's just like the pronoun. This is not your decision to make. We just have to say that. I don't have to, as a Rabbi David Smith said, we're past the point where we try to reason with people and argue with them about whether or not this is safe. My opinion is that it's not safe. And if that's my opinion and I don't want to do this, you have no authority to make me, and you have no authority to make me a secondhand citizen, to bar me from public areas. That's the fight we've got to take. We've got to take this directly on. We cannot make these side arguments. Steve Baker, Member of Parliament in the UK, Deputy Chairman of the COVID Recovery Group, said, first, they said, we'd need to get them to watch football. Today, that may be papers for the pub. Whether the state legislates for it, or recommends it, or simply allows it, the result will be the same, a two-tier Britain that prevents pregnant women from taking part in society, given that the government is telling them not to take the vaccine. Or one where we can turn back the clock and tolerate businesses turning away customers from communities which have shown an unfortunate hesitancy to take up the offer of a vaccine. We must not fall into this ghastly trap. And let me say that when he says, well, you know, pregnant women are not allowed to take it, Boris Johnson makes the same argument for young people. Young people don't have access to the vaccine yet. And so he makes this pragmatic argument. He says that this is unworkable. It's unworkable, and frankly, to put this upon our struggling publicans at this moment in time would be completely outrageous, says Nigel Farage. And he makes the argument that if he and his son were to go, and presumably he's had the vaccine, he said, let's say on April the 12th, I want to go to Blacksmith's Arms and cut him with my son who's 29. He hasn't had the jab. So can he come in or can he not come in? So presumably Nigel Farage has taken the vaccine, but his 29-year-old son is not allowed to get it yet. So that's the pragmatic argument that he's making. Well, that's not really the issue here. The issue is one of freedom and dignity. The issue is of individual liberty. The issue is of due process. The issue is not to create an apartheid society, a Jim Crow society. He says, this won't fly. Well, guess what? I'm not going to fly. I can't fly anymore because I will not comply with those regulations. And now I'm seeing this being rolled out everywhere, all at once, everywhere. Always said it was a transportation security agency, not the air traffic security agency. We always knew this was going to roll out. In the past, they would send out their Viper teams to bus stations or to train stations. And that was an egregious harbinger of what was to come. But let me tell you, it's here now. What we saw coming is at your doorstep and entering your house right now. Nigel Farage says, the funny thing about Boris is everyone says that he's a free market libertarian. But what we've seen all through this is that Boris doesn't really stand for very much at all. He said, despite the government's Orwellian response to the Chinese virus, Mr. Farage predicted that Britain's comparably successful vaccination program, combined with the ineffectiveness of the Labour Party, quote, the British public are of a mind to forgive Boris everything else. There is no opposition. To be honest, whatever his flaws, I suspect he could be prime minister for as long as he wants. And even though he wrote an op-ed piece for Breitbart London saying we are fast becoming a police state, he said, you notice in his criticism here, he's using this essentially in the same way that Republicans and Democrats criticize each other. They'll say that group, the other party, made mistakes in terms of rolling out the vaccines. We're going to roll out the vaccines better than they did. And that's exactly the argument that he made. He said, the EU is incompetent. We did a better job rolling out the vaccine here in the UK. He says, I couldn't have wished for anything that was more important or gave greater clarity. I'm disappointed for the people of Europe. They haven't gotten the vaccine. But I'm pleased that European solidarity has broken down and that people are realizing actually their duty is to look after the people that voted for them. Look, I agree with Nigel Farage. I was very excited when, in the summer of 2016, Brexit passed. I thought that was very important. And I said at the time, Winston Churchill said in his History of the English-Speaking People that when the Americans declared their independence and when they fought the war and when they won the war, it helped to break the power of an absolute monarch, which is what George III had become. He'd become an absolute monarch in defiance of the Magna Carta. And that was the authority that the Americans had to fight. And that was also the authority that the Parliament used to take back their power as well. But Winston Churchill said that the American war for independence also helped to establish Parliament and decentralized power, and that it was a good thing. And I said the same thing when Brexit passed. I said this is a very good thing because it is devolving power from the centralizing, globalizing effect that we see. So I was very excited about that. I've interviewed Nigel Farage. Of course, that interview's now been purged. But I agree with him about the EU. But the saddest thing about this is that he looks at this and says, yeah, we did a great job putting the vaccine out. And look at how much better job we did than the other party did. You see how this rolls out? I've seen the same thing with Mark Levin here, saying that this is the Trump vaccine. All you Trump supporters who are reluctant to do that, you ought to take it because it's the Trump vaccine. These people are falling in line. Every single one of them is falling in line to help us to become a police state. While they may wring their hands about it being a police state, nevertheless, they're going down that road. Britain's comparably successful vaccination program. We have a great vaccination program, especially compared to what the Labour Party is doing. The Labour Party doesn't have any leadership. You know, we got Bojo, and he's kind of, you know, he's a clown, but hey, the Labour Party doesn't have anybody either, right? Lesser of two evils. And by the way, we did a better job rolling out the vaccine than the Europeans did. Be glad. Hooray. Now, show me your passport to go to the pub. Ingsoc. 1984 is here. Here comes the global vaccine passports. Article from Zero Hedge. Greece. A sizable share of their country's gross domestic product comes from tourism, so they're going to reopen to visitors on May the 14th. However, they will require either a vaccination or proof of recovery from the virus of a negative test before entering the country. The Star Alliance of 26 carriers. Yeah, characters are for sure. But the biggest, these are airline carriers like Air China, Deutsche Lufthansa, Singapore, United Airline Holdings. There's also the IATA. That's an even bigger group. And they have all, both of these groups have thoroughly embraced the idea of a vaccine passport. The guy who heads the Star Alliance of 26 carriers believes a single set of standards needs to be developed for most major carriers and countries. See, we can't have a patchwork. We've got to have a global depository. Davos has already figured this out. They figured it out 6 years ago. They said, you'll own nothing, and we'll tell you where you can go, what you can do, what you can eat, how you can travel, or if you can travel. Singapore Airlines and Qatar Airlines have both started trials of passport apps. Carnival Cruise Lines has said nobody can board its ships without proof of vaccination. American Airlines is experimenting with the Verifly app, as has Hyatt Hotels. See, Verify. Not Verify, but Verifly, as in no fly. And United Airlines. Bill Barnett, founder of a hospitality consultant for hotels, says, the damage is psychological more than anything else. It's a case, he said, of needing to win over hearts and minds because there's still a fear factor out there. So he thinks that if only people who are vaccinated are allowed to do this, and we clamp down on everybody, and you got to show me you've been vaccinated, that's going to get rid of the fear. Let me tell you, these people are still selling the fear that will kill them. And to paraphrase the Bible, if you think that the vaccine is a crutch that you can lean on, you'll find that it'll break and pierce your hand. Because the vaccines are not going to work. They'll come back and they'll say, as they have many times, well, you know, we've got to do a re-up on that. And going to have to keep that constant update. This is not a one-shot and done. No, no, no. This is an annual thing. And maybe even more frequent than annual. Because we got variants out there. There's variants everywhere. And not only that, but they're working on mRNA vaccines. Pfizer's already rolling out the business model to come up with mRNA vaccines for everything out there. And everything out there will be required, not just this mysterious flu that they've relabeled. Everything. Man, they dangled a lot of money before them. They went from $9.5 billion for everything that they sold at Pfizer to making $30 billion just for this COVID vaccine. You better believe they're going to be eagerly making an mRNA vaccine for everything. Everything. You and your family are going to regret not getting a COVID shot, says a Canadian doctor. Individuals and families in Winnipeg that delay taking the COVID vaccine and then test positive for the coronavirus will, quote, regret having failed to be injected, threatened Dr. Anand Kumar. Believe me, If you turn out to be one of those people who delays getting the vaccine and then gets COVID and then end up in my ICU, you and your family are going to regret it, he said to the news. So this is a public statement. He's also a supporter of euthanasia, which may indicate that he's not just talking about the fact that you'll regret that you're sick. You may regret that he's your doctor. The first lawsuit, of course, against this was filed on February the 28th against COVID vaccine mandates. I reported on that previously. In New Mexico, you had a prison guard who sued supervisors and local officials because they made it a condition of employment. So we wait to see how that is going to roll out in the courts. But I don't think you're really going to get, cannot depend on the courts to protect your individual liberties. We see that various news publications are now pushing the idea, Gizmodo, WebMD, all these different status organizations have now come up with a phrase, the disinformation dozen. We've now seen that the total cone of silence that was put around anybody questioning the election results, the honesty and the veracity of the elections, that's now been put out on anybody now who is going to be talking about vaccines. Are they safe? Are they effective? Should we have a choice as to whether or not we take them? Oh, if you talk about that, you are the disinformation dozen. There is a Center for Countering Digital Hate. And they have teamed up with another center called Anti-Vax Watch. Let me tell you what. I did not do a deep dive to find out who funds these people yet. I bet if you do, you're going to find out they're being driven by the government and or trade industry. The Center for Countering Digital Hate and the Anti-Vax Watch. And so what they did was they said that we have analyzed nearly a million, it's like 800,000 posts over a couple of month period, and they found that 65% of the content came from 12 accounts, and they want them banned. They are demanding that Facebook and Twitter ban these 12 people who are writing negative things and questioning the safety of this 100% safe experimental vaccine that we've only had 4,000 people in Europe and 2,000 people in America die in the last 2 months. 100% safe, though. And it's 100% effective as well, too. And if you deny that, you need to be silenced quickly. The disinformation dozen. Who is it? Ty and Charlene Bollinger, RFK Jr., Joseph Mercola, Sherry Tenpenny, Riza Islam, Rashid Buthar, Aaron Elizabeth, Sayer G., Kelly Brogan, Christiane Northrup, Ben Tapper, and Kevin Jenkins. So they want to shut these people down. Shut them down. As a matter of fact, you know, when you look at what Robert Kennedy Jr. is doing, he's just showing people the CDC database. He's showing people and writing letters to the FDA. He said, do you realize that this polyethylene glycol that you're encasing these nanoparticles in, do you realize that a lot of people have anaphylactic shock to this back in September? He writes that to the FDA, and the FDA says, we don't care. Tell the manufacturers. Maybe they care. And over again, we see this. The regulators, this is not just a revolving door, folks. This is just complete corruption. The only thing to call this. Facebook has already taken action against some of the groups in this report, said a Facebook spokesman to The Hill. They said, since research shows that the best way to combat vaccine hesitancy is to connect people to reliable information from health experts, we've also connected over 2 billion people to resources from health authorities. See? That's what you do. Well, honestly, I wouldn't have a problem with that. If they wanted to, whenever I said something, and if it was against the government's opinion and the government's narrative, if these people wanted to say, well, if you want to know the other side, here's the link. Now, of course, they're not doing that for the government pronouncements. They're not saying, if you'd like to know, this is what the government says. If you'd like to know the other side, well, you know, here's a link to Children's Health Defense Fund. or to David Knight's show or whatever. They don't do that. but that's fine. I could handle a situation where there's a debate of ideas, but that's not what they're doing. They're just shutting down and demonizing anybody doing that. And it's coming from government. It's not just these supposedly NGO organizations. It is also coming from government. There was a Thursday hearing on disinformation in the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. And so then they brought in, you know, the people from Twitter, from Facebook, from Google. They had Dorsey, they had Zuckerberg, and they had Sundar Pichai. All three of them, writes Gizmodo, hedged or simply reiterated that their companies have rules when pressed by Representative Mike Doyle on these dozen anti-vaxxers. So in Thursday's hearing, you have this Democrat, Mike Dole. He's from Pennsylvania. And he's actually a pro-choice Democrat when it comes to abortion. He's not a pro-choice Democrat when it comes to information, though, or whether or not you're going to be forced to take a vaccine. This is a guy who used to be get about a 65% on the national right to life. But he made a switch, flipped about 2005. After 2005, everything that he's voted on has been hardcore pro-abortion. For example, in 2011, he wanted federally funded abortions. In 2015, he talked about how abortion should be a constitutional right. In 2007, he supported embryonic stem cell lines. Prior to that, he had opposed that type of legislation. So around 2005 to 2007, he switched. And now he is all for abortion. But he doesn't think that you ought to have the right to be informed or to make a decision about vaccines. And so he was hectoring all three of these people. Listen to what he did. Zuckerberg said Facebook would need to see specific examples of the content in question, after which Doyle interrupted him. See, he doesn't believe in free speech. Shut up. I'm talking here. Pichai then pivoted to a statistic about how many YouTube videos with misleading information about the pandemic the company had deleted. But he added that some otherwise infringing content was allowed. He said if it's people's personal experiences, we're going to let them talk about their personal experiences. Doyle cut him off after re-asking the question. Dorsey simply stated, Twitter moderators remove everything against our policy. You know what else? You know the dog that didn't bark here? There's no GOP people defending free speech. There's no GOP people defending informed consent or your right to know. To be presented with the facts. To even be presented with the facts that the government is collecting about the adverse effects of these vaccines. No, no, no. GOP is not there to stand up for that. They've been AWOL for several years on any free speech. Coronavirus vaccines only work if people actually get them. Pseudoscience coronavirus conspiracy theories peddled by a small number of uninformed anti-vaxxers have reached tens of millions of social media followers, said the Connecticut Attorney General William Tong, one of the many state attorneys general who signed a letter to Facebook and Twitter demanding censorship. This is where we are. We have Democrat Party congressmen bringing in the heads of these, I guess we could call them now, instead of technocrats, we could call them UN nerds, bringing them in, lecturing them about how they need to censor people. And we have state attorneys generals signing a letter demanding this as well. And then you have the Republicans doing nothing about it. Nothing. Facebook and Twitter must fully and immediately enforce their own policies or risk prolonging this pandemic. See that? The government and these attorneys general are telling Facebook and Twitter, we're going to blame the pandemic on you if you don't censor. They're going to blame the pandemic on you if you don't get vaccinated. Exactly what is happening. So we have the piece on NBC, the hit piece. Let's play that. This is the way NBC is rolling this out. They did a hit piece on people who are skeptics about vaccines. If you're a skeptic about vaccine, you're just a conspiracy theorist. You're uninformed. You're ignorant. And we're going to keep you uninformed and ignorant because you just need to do what the government says. They're the ones who are in sole possession of all science, all information, and there is no debating to be had about that. I want you to see this hit piece that was rolled out by NBC. Go ahead.
Convincing skeptics to get the vaccine is easier said than done, especially in rural areas that are heavily Republican. NBC News political reporter Vaughn Hilliard is in Pineville, Missouri. Vaughn, if I understand correctly, that county has the second lowest vaccination rate in all of Missouri. Why are people there so hesitant to get a COVID shot?
You're exactly right, Allison. We're talking about just 5% of the county here fully vaccinated, and just 8% of the folks in this county have received the first dose here.
See his mask,
and that comes down to the very heart of the question. Why is there this hesitancy here that is prevailing based off of conversations we've had with folks?
The government says
these numbers are reflected in polling where self-described Republicans across the country, about half of them say that either they're not going to get a vaccine or they're going to wait and see. And in some conversations with folks, including the ones you're about to hear, that's very much what we heard. Take a listen.
This is his mask on the street report.
I don't care if I look like the wise guy or the dumb guy. It's my decision. I just decided I'm not going to do it. I'm a guinea pig, if that's the case.
Yeah, I'm not going to get the COVID vaccine. I don't feel like I don't know. I just feel like I'm good. I don't need to. I take vitamins and whatnot, and I'm pretty healthy, so...
Allison, again, we need to underscore the fact that public health officials, including those locally here, have said that the vaccine is safe and have gotten the vaccine themselves. But what you continue to hear is this prevailing lack of trust in the government. This isn't just a 2021 thing or a coronavirus vaccine thing, but this is a mounting, ever-growing distrust in the government at large.
Vaughn, you did find some people who got the vaccine. So what did they tell you?
Yeah, I want to let you hear from a couple of them who did get the vaccine, and we were actually just down the road. There's a clinic that was underway today, and there will be tomorrow. The supply is here in town. It's a matter of folks calling up and making their appointment. Hear from some of these folks who did get their vaccine, talking about others in their community.
Oh, I've heard quite a few people say they're not going to get it. They're afraid to put things in their body. They're afraid they're going
to
get something from it. They're afraid that just, I don't know. I haven't heard any good reason why people aren't going to get it.
Yeah,
all you got to do is go to Facebook and you'll get bombarded with the people thinking that the vaccine is going to kill them.
Very good NBC.
And in this community, you're seeing this reflected nationally in these mostly largely white conservative rural communities, even up on Capitol Hill. In the U.S. House, there are still more than 100 members who have declined to receive a vaccine despite it being available to them over the last 3 months, Allison.
All right, Vaughn Hilliard, we always love having you on News Now. Great to see you there in Missouri.
Yeah, this idiot
NBC
standing
News
out
viewers,
there.
Thanks for checking out our YouTube channel.
Go ahead and
subscribe
right
by
there,
clicking on that button down here.
This guy
here.
Standing out on a street corner by himself, alone, with a mask on, gasping for air. Every time he would take a breath, you'd see that suck the thing into his mouth. But of course, you know, the best that he could do would be to find somebody that says, yeah, I don't. These people out there, they're afraid to put anything in their body. I mean, not me. You know, let's call out Dolly Parton again. She's not afraid to put anything in her body. So, of course, she has no problem with vaccines either. We don't even know the effect that it has on silicon. But she's not concerned about that. Just, you know, whatever. And, you know, Facebook, you get bombarded with this stuff, but you go to NBC or any of the other mainstream media, that's what you get bombarded with. That shameless propaganda that's there. And when we look at the deplatforming of individuals, the National Vaccine Information Center already got deplatformed about a month ago, March the 8th. So I guess that's one of the reasons why they weren't in the dirty dozen. Disinfo dozen, because they already pushed them out. They pointed out in their notification, their statement on Facebook's deplatforming of NVIC on March 8th, they said, a highly rated small charity among U.S. nonprofit organizations, the National Vaccine Information Center was founded in 1982 by parents of DPT vaccine-injured children to prevent vaccine injuries and deaths through public education. After maintaining a Facebook page since 2008, on March the 2nd, 2021, the 39-year-old National Vaccine Information Center was deplatformed by Facebook. After sponsoring the 5th International Public Conference on Vaccination, Protecting Health and Autonomy in the 21st Century Online, in the fall of 2020, NVIC began receiving multiple warnings from Facebook that their page violated community standards. Barbara Lowe Fisher said, "We're not surprised Zuckerberg views the truthful information that NVIC publishes about vaccine science, policy, and law as a threat to perpetuating false narratives about vaccine safety created by the pharmaceutical industry and its business partners. The U.S. Congress has encouraged the creation of public-private business partnerships between vaccine manufacturers and federal agencies over the past three decades. In order to be a part of those lucrative partnerships, Silicon Valley companies like Facebook are clearly happy to engage in censorship." She added, "NVIC encourages everyone to leave social media networks, eroding civil liberties, which include freedom of thought, speech, and conscience, and join those that protect freedom of speech. To stay connected with NVIC, become a registered user of the free online NVIC advocacy portal and defend vaccine choices in your state." Absolutely. And one of the reasons why you're going to have to start, it's going to be very important, and we're anxious to get our website up, to get a mailing list so we can keep in touch without having to rely on social media, because it's just a matter of time. I'm not going to shut up about pronouns. I'm not going to shut up about vaccine mandates and the removal of individual liberty and informed consent, the principle that first do no harm. No, that doesn't apply anymore. Like, first get my legal immunity, and then I can make tens of billions of dollars without even having to look over my shoulder. Let me give you an example here. We have, and this has made a lot of national, international news, two trains collided in Egypt, two passenger trains, killed 32 people. And there's reports all over social media showing pictures of it that people have taken and put up. But this is in Egypt, and it is international news that 32 people died. But you're not allowed to know about something that in 2 months has killed over 6,000 people in the U.S. and Europe. These vaccines kill them instantly. And when I say instantly, I mean about half of them died within 48 hours. We're not talking about long-term effects. You know, last time they did one of these rushed vaccines with Pandemrix during the 2008-2009 swine flu, H1N1, you didn't have problems show up for about a year, and then they showed up in children, and it was in Scandinavian countries where they've now put the AstraZeneca vaccine on hold. It was in those countries that they did the due diligence to expose it. One of the best documented cases. But now we have a situation where thousands of people have died. We're not allowed to talk about that. You're allowed to talk about two trains colliding in Egypt, but you're not allowed to talk about the train wreck of Operation Warp Speed. And, you know, when I look at this, I think, how far away are we from doing autonomous self-driving cars when you can have two passenger trains collide head-on railroad tracks? I mean, that is a simple problem, right? You've got basically two vehicles that you're controlling and one set of tracks, and you can't keep them separate? But no, we're going to go the UN nerds have everything solved, right, for autonomous vehicles. Well, the interesting thing is that there was a 12-minute video that basically just eviscerated Elon Musk and his statements about self-driving cars over the last 5 years. It went up on YouTube, and it compared what the company has actually been able to achieve and deliver in the 12-minute video. They laid out a blatantly obvious case for full self-driving to be, as one user described it, quote, one of the biggest bait-and-switch scams in history. A noted Tesla short seller, Montana skeptic, called the video a truly superb 12-minute YouTube presentation on Tesla's full self-driving promises, noting that almost every word spoken or written is by Elon Musk, his carefully selected beta testers, or his legal counsel. In fact, it made such an impact. Users were joking that they were surprised it hadn't been pulled from YouTube yet. And then, of course, by the end of the night, it had been pulled by YouTube. Why would they pull that? Why would they defend Elon Musk? Well, because Google is also a part of this bait-and-switch self-driving scam. A bigger part, their Waymo program. They are very heavily involved in this. Even though they have laid back and they haven't offered any products, Google has a bigger stake in this self-driving fantasy than Elon. And then, of course, behind Google is DARPA. They have the biggest stake. It was DARPA that ran the self-driving projects. It was their very first competition, was to have self-driving vehicles. And this is really where the UN agenda, the smart cities agenda, the 5G bandwidth to control everything, that's really where it's coming from. It's coming from DARPA with their partners, Google and crony capitalists like Elon Musk. And so they pulled that down from YouTube. And then they re-uploaded it to Vimeo. Vimeo then pulled it down. Right now it's on Veo. And they put it out in a series of 5 tweets. But this is the way this rolls. The same people who do not want you to see what's going on with vaccines, they don't want you to think that there's any possibility that it could be dangerous. They also don't want you to see any possibility that their self-driving cars could be dangerous as well. Shots in little arms, and this is one of the most disgusting things that I've seen, the way they continue to phrase this. This is from the AP, and this happened at Duke in Durham, North Carolina. 9-year-old twins, and they focused on this. They did a special article interviewing the twins, talking to their parents who are medical researchers and are experimenting on their kids just like B.F. Skinner did. And so the COVID vaccine testing turns to kids, says AP News. 9-year-old twins. Surprised they didn't call this the Mengele Project, right? Kids should get the shot, said one of the children that had been told this by their parents, so that everything might be a bit more normal. She's looking forward to when she can have sleepovers with friends again. Did they take this away from the kids? Say, this is your ticket to having everything normal again. Moderna recently began a similar study to Pfizer's new trial. So this is the Pfizer trial where they're starting to inject children. Both companies are hunting for the right dosage of each shot for each group as they work toward eventually vaccinating babies as young as 6 months. These children do not have... They have a statistically zero risk of this disease. So why would we give children who have a statistically zero chance of dying? And even the AP says, because children's infection rates are so low, they only make up 13% of COVID-19 cases documented in the U.S., the main focus of the pediatric studies isn't counting the number of illnesses, right? In other words, we know this isn't affecting the kids. Why? Because they've relabeled the actuarial tables. And they've relabeled flu deaths. That's what your COVID pandemic is. It's a relabeling of the actuarial tables. A real pandemic does not only affect elderly people. And you can see that if you compare this to the 1918 flu epidemic. Across the board, demographically, it was the same to every age group. You had a spike of those who are under a year old and those who are over 80. But that's not the case with this one. With this one, it is statistically zero until you get to your mid-60s, and it starts going up exponentially, just like the actuarial tables. And, of course, flu has disappeared as well. And so for something that statistically is zero risk, you're going to expose these children to a non-zero risk with these vaccines. And they don't even know what the dosage is. They said they're hunting for the right dosage They said a small number of children received different doses of the vaccine as scientists winnow out the best dosage to test in several thousand kids in the next phase. They winnow out. Are they winnowing out kids? Or are they winnowing out the numbers? You know, when I got my scuba diving certificate, the guys that taught me told me that the Navy's decompression tables, how long you have to stay at a particular depth. In other words, you go down, as you stay at a particular depth, the pressure is very great from the water. Every 33 feet, you add another atmosphere of pressure. And so what that does is it starts to cause the nitrogen to dissolve into your body. And if you don't gradually decompress with that, it will bubble out in a very bad way when the pressure decreases, you know, kind of like shaking up a soda can and then popping it. It'll do that to your body and give you the bends. May kill you. How did they get those Navy decompression tables? Well, they had Navy divers as volunteers, I was told, and it's done by trial and error. They're doing this to kids now. These are not volunteers. These are not Navy personnel, military personnel. These are kids that they're experimenting with a dosage to see what they can tolerate to presumably treat a pandemic at which they don't have any risk. How reprehensible and unethical is this? I just can't describe it. They said, but we must vaccinate the children to achieve herd immunity. No. No, no, no. You don't risk children for the sake of the herd, for the sake of the village. It takes a village to put the health of children at risk for the village, doesn't it? This is a whole idea that individuals don't matter. Only the group matters. The problem is the group is composed of individuals. And so if none of the individuals in the group matter, then really the group doesn't matter either. It's just a control device for people like Hillary Clinton and people of her ilk. It takes a village to sacrifice the children for the good of the village, doesn't it? That's what this is. Children being sacrificed for their political agenda. It's just absolutely reprehensible. I was sent this from a listener. He said, one way or the other, they're going to make sure you are vaccinated, even if you don't know it. This came from Goatree, who I've interviewed about cybersecurity issues. And this is from a trade publication called Nanotechnology News. He said, this is a legit industry publication about nanotech. And I talked about this in the fall because that's when this story first came out. In November, you had Johns Hopkins University talking about how these coronavirus testing swabs could be laced with tiny star-shaped microdevices, as Johns Hopkins pointed out, capable of delivering vaccines to people without their knowledge or consent. And so this trade publication on nanotechnology decided that they would talk about the mechanism of how it works. Goatree says, I'm honestly surprised no one thought of crop dusters flying over and spraying with these things. They said, because more than half of America is vaccine hesitant, says Nanotechnology News, we've got to find a way to get people vaccinated. We could use injection technology to secretly vaccinate people through the nasal or anal PCR test swabs that are being jammed in their orifices. Patrick Smith from JHU wrote the article about the study in which these tiny star-shaped microdevices were inspired, he said, by a parasitic worm that digs its sharp teeth into its host's intestines. David Garcias, a professor in the Whiting School of Engineering and gastroenterologist, Lauren Sellerou, director of the Johns Hopkins Inflammatory Bowel Disease Center, led a team of researchers and biomedical engineers that designed and tested the shape-changing microdevices that mimic the way parasitic hookworms affix themselves to an organism's intestines, known as therogrippers. You remember this? Talked about this back in November, but not in detail. These microdevice chips made out of metal and thin shape-changing film are coated in heat-sensitive paraffin wax that is sent into the body unnoticed. Each of these chips is no larger than a speck of dust. And in the picture, they compare it to a speck of dust. Once inside the body, the star-shaped devices respond to heat by closing up and affixing themselves to the intestinal wall with little prongs. The centers of these now closed stars are then able to deliver whatever the drug was that was implanted inside of them. In this case, maybe the Wuhan vaccine. Quote, the claim is that these dust-sized theragrippers can be implanted in the tips of PCR swabs, be delivered into innocent victims, said John O'Sullivan for Principia Scientific International. It may be utterly immoral and likely illegal, but it is certainly feasible. Just because you can do it doesn't mean that you should. Remember that from the film Jurassic Park? Thousands of these sinister miniature theragrippers can be deployed in the GI tract via a simple, innocent swab given as part of the COVID-19 test, already taken by millions worldwide. Quite simply, you wouldn't feel a thing. That's right. These people have an agenda, and they don't care about your safety. You got people who don't trust the government. You got people who don't trust the technology. You got people who don't trust engineers who have the capability to do almost anything, but are totally devoid of any kind of moral perspective. But hey, you should just go ahead and put it in your body, right? According to the NBC people that they did when they did the mask on the street interview. Also got this communication from a listener. Said, has anybody researched what happens when a vaccinated person gives blood to a non-vaccinated person? Or their organs, etc.? I mean, this is very serious because what we're seeing, especially with the AstraZeneca situation, is the effect that is happening is a major modification of blood platelets, right? That's causing all kinds of problems. And if the vaccine, and of course all of these vaccines, even the ones like Johnson & Johnson, which says, well, it's an adenovirus, the adenovirus is just the carrier for an mRNA vector or sequence that is going to modify cause your body to start manufacturing, supposedly, these parts of what they're looking for with the PCR tests. Another reason why we're seeing the cases going up. But all of these vaccines operate by modifying your body in ways that they presume to know what they're doing, but we aren't sure about that, but definitely has an effect on the blood. So he says, what are the ramifications if somebody who's vaccinated gives blood? Nobody is talking about this, are they? Just like the question that I had about what happens if you don't keep it refrigerated at minus 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Does it become toxic or does it become neutralized? We don't know. They aren't going to tell us. And what happens if you do a transfusion from somebody who's been vaccinated? What are the ramifications? Will this compromised DNA cell structure, blood, etc., cause changes and reactions in non-vaccinated persons? Some inquiring minds want to know. But I know the answer is a big fat That's right. We're going to take a quick break, give you another commercial about how you should trust these people who have been telling you, selling you products for many years. Understand that what we're seeing here, it's just another product placement. This is $250 million by the Trump administration, and of course, more money is being kicked in by the Biden administration, to propagandize you to buy products from big pharmaceutical companies who were given $20 billion right up front and even more money to make these products, given legal immunity and protection against any damage that these products would cause. And so now the government is also hyping this for them. And we'll tell you where you can find our program as well. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You.
And you.
And you.
And you.
Duck. And cover.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about. Duck and cover. First, you'll have to know what happens when an atomic bomb explodes. You'll know when it comes. We hope it never comes, but we must get ready. It looks something like this. There is a bright flash, brighter than the sun, brighter than anything you've ever seen. If you were not ready and did not know what to do, it could hurt you in different ways. It could knock you down hard or throw you against a tree or a wall. It is such a big explosion, it can smash in buildings and knock signboards over and break windows all over town. But if you duck and cover like Bert, you will be much safer. You know how bad sunburn can feel. The atomic bomb flash could burn you worse than a terrible sunburn, especially where you're not covered. First, you duck, and then you cover. And very tightly, you cover the back of your neck and your face. Duck and cover underneath a table or desk or anything else close by. This is what to do if you should be in a corridor. You duck and cover tight against the wall this way. Remember to keep your face, the back of your neck, covered tightly. Try to fall away from windows or doors with glass in them. Then, if the glass breaks and flies through the air, it won't cut you.
Yeah, that should do it.
It's a bomb. Duck and cover. Paul and Patty know what to do. Paul covered the back of his head so that he wouldn't be burned. And Patty covered herself with the coat she was carrying. They knew how to duck and cover.
That coat, that
Tony knows the bomb can explode any time of the year, day or night. He is ready for it. Duck and cover. Attaboy, Tony. That flash means act fast. Tony knows that it helps to get to any kind of cover. This wall was close by, so that's where he ducked and covered. Duck and cover! This family knows what to do, just as your own family should. They know that even a thin cloth helps protect them. Even a newspaper can save you from a bad burn.
Yeah, see right there.
But the most important thing of all is to duck and cover yourself, especially where your clothes do not cover you. But there might not be any grown-ups around when the bomb explodes. Then, you're on your own.
Remember what to do, friends. Now tell me right out loud. What are you supposed to do when you see the flash?
Yeah, that should do it, right? See, that was my childhood, which explains why I'm so cynical about the government. I knew as a kid in second grade that was not going to do it. Yeah, duck and cover. Put that newspaper. You look at the cartoon explanation. So look at this. We got this blast. And first of all, this massive fire is going to set everything on fire. And then you get hit with a blast wave and so forth. But, you know, that little turtle, he's good shape. You know, turtles are all going to survive. And so you need a duck and cover like Bert. These are the same people who are now telling you that you need to take the vaccine. These are the same people who are telling you the vaccine will be safe. It'll save you from the pandemic. And they created the problem. I knew then that that wasn't going to work. And I also knew who had created the problem of the Cuban Missile Crisis and the threat that we're experiencing. And it was a very real threat. I grew up in Tampa, Florida, and we were told, even though I was a short walking distance from my home, we had neighborhood schools in those days. You have everybody being bused from one side of town to the other side of town. And so I could walk home, usually did, just a few minutes. Told that, well, you're going to have to bring clothes to school because you're not going to have enough time to get home. Yeah. And so we had everybody brought a second set of clothes. Why? I guess the first set's going to be burned up in that initial blast, but then the ones that are in the cloakroom, that's your second change of clothes while you die slowly of radiation poisoning if you survive. I don't know. But this is the way the government has always operated. It was a very good film in the 1980s called When the Wind Blows. And it was a cartoon, and it lampooned the suggestions of the British government at that time. And what it was, it depicted a couple, back in the 1950s, cartoon couple are there, and there's a tense situation, and nuclear war starts, and there's a massive radiation cloud that is hitting them, and they're going right down the book, doing everything that the government told them to do, completely trusting everything that the government says to do as they're slowly dying. And you watch that happen. And we aren't just slowly dying in this country. We are dying very, very rapidly from this kind of cynical propaganda and manipulation. And we're at that phase right now. They point out they are focusing all of their efforts now to censor any information that would counter the government narrative. You are going to be enemies of the state. You're going to have the extremists, people who are Christians who don't follow the tranny pronouns, people who are vaccine skeptics. We are now going to be the focus of the intelligence agencies. These spies who have in the past used their propaganda in foreign countries are going to be using it a very weaponized feedback system on social media. That was what it was designed for. This is the moment. This is all designed. This has been decades in the making. All of this stuff, as I pointed out many times, goes back to 9/11. The Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, the simulations of Dark Winter and the legislation that came out of that, and the anthrax attack that was between the two, they were all tied together with the police and surveillance state that was put in place after 9/11. This is the next phase of it. It is a much deeper, more comprehensive phase, and it's being ushered in very rapidly and done globally to everybody. All right, are we going to be bringing in, we got an interview with a couple of filmmakers. Okay, we're scheduled at 10 o'clock, so we're waiting to see if we have a connection with them. Hopefully we will. And this is Phil McAleer, who put together the movie about Gosnell. Excellent film. I highly suggest that you watch that. It's done as a courtroom drama. They didn't get into the grisly aspects of it. And they used Dean Cain and a very professional cast to do it. They are doing a crowd-raising, a crowdfunding for another video, which would be about the Biden crime family, My Son Hunter. So we hope to get them on. They're supposed to be on in the third hour, so we're waiting to establish connection with them. But let's talk while we're waiting about America held hostage on day 380 days of this going along. And now we have Trump's CDC director. Now, this is Robert Redfield, who was put in by Trump in 2018, just in time for this pandemic. He is now saying that he believes that the coronavirus escaped from a Wuhan lab. Oh, and this is, as it's reported by Mediaite, that a stunning assessment that echoes claims made by other members of the Trump administration, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And so in an interview with CNN's Sanjay Gupta, he made it very clear that he was expressing his opinion that the coronavirus came from the Wuhan biosafety level 4 lab, the only biosafety level 4 lab in China, the Wuhan Institute of Virology. He said this, quote, "I'm of the point of view that I still think the most likely etiology of this pathology in Wuhan was from a laboratory. Escaped. He said, other people don't believe that. That's fine. Science will eventually figure it out. It's not unusual for respiratory pathogens that are being worked on in a lab to infect the lab worker. That's not implying any intentionality. It's my opinion, right? But I'm a virologist, and I've spent my life in virology. I do not believe this somehow came from a bat to a human. And at that moment in time, that the virus came to the human, became one of the most infectious diseases, viruses that we've known in humanity for human-to-human transmission. Really? So, you don't believe that it just jumped, it somehow jumped from a bat to humans in the wet market? All right, well, would you believe a pangolin, right? Go back to Maxwell Smart. No, you wouldn't believe that either? Well, let's see, what else would you believe? Would you believe that it's fatal? Would you believe even that it's an epidemic, let alone a pandemic? Have you seen people falling down and dead in the streets like we were shown the propaganda films out of China? And the thing that's concerning me about this is that this is happening a year after the fact. Now, any rational person would know that there's a very good chance that this would happen, right? He says, I've worked, and we know that this happens all the time. It's not unusual for respiratory pathogens to infect a lab worker. And I report on this quite a bit. You had Allison Young at USA Today did an excellent series of exposés on accidents in CDC labs. They're happening all over the place. And there's several hundred labs in the U.S. They're not all biosafety level 3 and 4 labs, but there's several hundred of them, like in your backyard, typically with universities. And they're having accidents all the time. They're infecting animals with diseases that then escape the labs. Or the people that are working there come down and contract the disease. One of the best documented ones was a case of very rare bacteria that had a 45% fatality rate once it took hold. Burkholderia pseudomallei from a only found in two areas of the world. So they brought it in to the U.S., the National Primate Center there at Tulane University, and they started doing experiments on it in a biosafety level 3 lab. And then they found out that some of the monkeys out in the 500-acre park had come down with it. So they brought in a CDC team to investigate. One of the workers came down with it. And that and a whole bunch of other accidents, very careless accidents, faulty equipment, so forth, caused them to put a moratorium for a couple of years on. Fauci and Francis Collins at the NIH ignored that, continued to do their research on coronaviruses and bats at UNC Chapel Hill and funded this research in Wuhan when they were prohibited from doing so. And so you see that Fauci comes out immediately. And Zero Hedge says, well, somebody must have picked up the red phone and made a call, as Dr. Fauci said during a Friday White House press briefing that, quote, most scientists believe COVID-19 did not come from a lab. So he immediately comes out and pushes back against Robert Redfield. Now, Robert Redfield was the head of the CDC. We worship the CDC. We go by everything the CDC and the WHO and Fauci say. How can this be? How can you have two of our most venerated authoritarian sources saying different things? Because science is science, and it's settled, and there's no debate, right? They have different opinions about this. The real issue is that there is legal liability for Fauci. David Martin, who I interviewed, said he ought to be led out of the White House when Trump had him there on the podium. He said he should be led out of there in handcuffs. Not only did he and Francis Collins at the NIH arrogantly disobey congressional orders, not only did they continue to fund these types of things in direct defiance, but there's also other indications of financial irregularity and profiteering by these people as well. He should be investigated for this. Now, having said all of that, and having said, as I did, that there was a very reasonable It was very reasonable to believe, as Robert Redfield is now saying a year later, it was very reasonable to believe that this was a weaponized virus. Whether it was intentionally or accidentally released, it's not reasonable to think that it came from bats or pangolins or anything else, but that it was being worked on. If you remember, Zero Hedge got kicked off for a week or two because they published the LinkedIn profile of one of the scientists at the Wuhan lab that said he was working on coronaviruses and bats, right? That was part of his public profile. And they said, they kicked off Zero Hedge and accused them of doxing an individual. Well, it's not doxing an individual if you just repeat what they put on their public profile. And that was on his own CV. So they carefully guarded that from the very beginning. My concern was that a year ago when I was at InfoWars, I said, regardless of what this is, if this is something that is weaponized, and it looks like that's likely the case, and if it was released accidentally or intentionally, the worst thing we could do is to lock everything down, because that's going to create shortages of food, shortages of medicine, as it did. It's going to set up a destruction of our civil liberties. It's going to empower these people to take away our freedoms, and we'll never get them back. That's what I said. And so I didn't want to push that panic button repeatedly. And I felt like InfoWars is pushing that harder. As a matter of fact, you can see Mike Adams complaining that Fauci wasn't locking things down enough. You can see him complaining that Fauci wasn't pushing a mask mandate, and on, when Fauci was saying, we don't need no mask mandate. We've never done anything like that before. Like, you better do it now. You better do it now. This is a weaponized thing coming out of China. You better lock everything down. And I said, no, you can't lock everything down. So why is he doing it a year later? Because Robert Redfield coming out and saying this, it's exactly the same thing that Fauci is doing in terms of talking about variants. He's trying to scare people again. Here we are a year later, and now the CDC guy who knew this a year ago and didn't say anything about it, yeah, he let Alex Jones carry the water for him to panic people. Now he's out there pushing the panic button, he and Pompeo. Why? Because these Trump administration people want this to happen. The Trump media, like InfoWars, the Trump directors, they want you panicked. They want you to take the vaccine. They want you to embrace this slavery. Do not make that Faucian bargain. So Keith Olbermann comes back and says, well, we're all allowed to have opinions. My opinion is that Robert Redfield is a quack and CNN should never give him a platform. There you go. So he's gone from expert to quack just like that. But he's pushing this agenda. Do you understand? He's pushing this agenda. Yeah, here's the truth. He wasn't an expert a year ago and a quack today. He was always a political bureaucrat with an agenda. And the agenda had nothing to do with Republicans versus Democrats. The agenda was a UN agenda. It was a Davos agenda. It was a Bilderberg agenda. It was a Gates agenda. He's always had that agenda. And I'm telling you, pushing this now, he's pushing that same agenda. Pushing that same agenda. If he believes that, and of course, common sense told him that that was a possibility, he could have said that a year ago. But it still would not have made these approaches that we have. It still would have made no sense. You know, we have, it's interesting, the letter from Thomas Jefferson, where he made the statement that is engraved in the dome of the Jefferson Memorial, where he said, I've sworn on the altar of God, rebellion, I guess, or defiance or resistance, or every form of tyranny over the mind of man. This is tyranny over the mind of man. And that letter that he wrote, where that quote came from, was a letter that he wrote to Dr. Benjamin Rush. Benjamin Rush is one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And he was a medical professional. He was a Christian. And part of that letter was really to address, I think, Benjamin Rush's concerns, as many people had, about, you know, the false narrative that is being put out that Thomas Jefferson was going to engage in religious persecution, which he didn't. They had people who were afraid, people who were, because of the campaign of John Adams, they were burying their Bibles in their backyards, and worried that Jefferson was going to come for those. And so he wrote a letter also, that Danbury Baptist wrote a letter to him saying, you know, are you going to attack us for being Christians? They were Baptists in Rhode Island. And he said, no, there's a wall of separation between the government and the church. And what he meant was that the First Amendment put a wall around the federal government. They couldn't do anything. Now, today, we put the wall around the churches. We put the wall around individual Christians. But when he wrote Benjamin Rush, he began that letter by saying, I'm glad to see that things are going well with the current scourge that is happening where you are, as well as in places like Norfolk. And he said, and the scourge he was talking about at the time was an outbreak, an epidemic of yellow fever. Yellow fever. I thought, wow, it's so much like what we're seeing now. And he said, these things happen. And he said, we'll get over it. And we go through these difficulties, said Jefferson, and it helps to strengthen us. In God's providence, he gives us these difficult times, and we will learn and be stronger individuals for it. And he said, one of the things that is going to come of this, I believe, that is already positive in God's providence, is that it's going to educate people that they don't want to live in cities. And that's also where the quote, he says, cities are a threat to the health, the wealth, and the liberties of man. And if it takes a yellow fever outbreak to get people to realize they don't want to live in the cities, that's God's kind providence to show that to us. So it shows a couple of things. It shows that he wasn't nearly as much of an atheist as 99% of our politicians today. He did have his issues. He wanted to purge anything that was supernatural out of the Bible. And of course, as C.S. Lewis said, if you think that Jesus was simply a moral teacher, that makes absolutely no sense. How could a moral teacher claim to be God? And so he's either a liar, a lunatic, or he is Lord, right? But Jefferson wanted to purge anything that was supernatural out of the Bible. He was fundamentally coming at it from a deist point of view. But he was far more of a Christian than most of our political leaders. He certainly supported individual liberty, which we don't have any leaders doing that. And he realized at the time that the ultimate fight for liberty is the tyranny over minds. And that's what we're seeing now. This Marxist approach is set up to make sure that we don't have the kinds of, that we don't have free thought. They want to exercise their tyranny over your mind. That is the essence of totalitarianism. It just isn't telling you what you can and cannot do in every aspect of your life. It's the tyranny over your mind, and that is what we are facing right now, that kind of fear. And both Jefferson and Benjamin Rush, and Benjamin Rush, famous for having said that we needed to have a constitutional amendment to protect our individual choice in healthcare. He said, if we don't, we're going to have a tyranny of the medical community. Pharmaceutical companies, what that looks like today. The Supreme Court judge in the UK expects that people will be forced to wear masks and stay home for 10 years. British former Supreme Court judge Lord Sumption warned that social controls brought about by the coronavirus may be kept in place by the governments for decades. He says it is politically unrealistic to expect the government to backtrack now. He said the Second World War, which went on for 9 years, the rationing after the Second World War went on for 9 years, he said, I think this might be even longer. An interesting parallel is the continuation of wartime food rationing after the last war. People were in favor of that because they were in favor of social control. He said, in the 1951 general election, the Labor Party lost its majority entirely because people with 5 years more experience of social control got fed up with it. Sooner or later, that's going to happen in this country. But he believes that it'll be later. Because now what we have, instead of food rationing, we have rationing of access to your life. We have rationing of access to travel, access to, we have rationing of work. We have rationing of jobs to people who are not essential. We have rationing of education. And everything is being rationed to us now as part of the Great Reset. He said, I know a lot of people would prefer not to put their head above the parapet. From the very moment I started to make these points, I began to get emails from politicians who agreed with what I had to say, but that they themselves were dare not speak out. That, I think, is a very serious state of affairs. Speaking about the draconian crackdown, Sumption said, people ought to be entitled to voice their differences of opinion. If the only way you can enforce distancing is by beating people over the head with the truncheons, then it's not worth it. And if the only way that you can convince people that your vaccine or your masks or your social distancing are effective, if that's the only way that you can do that, is by force, it's not worth doing that either. Wall Street Journal asks, weeks after Texas reopened, it said health experts are looking for the impact. The state hasn't seen a rise in cases. And 2 weeks after businesses fully reopen. And so Jeffrey Tucker, the American Institute for Economic Research, says, why is everybody in Texas not dying? We didn't obey them, so why aren't we dying? If you pay attention only to the media fear campaigns, you would find this to be very confusing. More than 2 weeks ago, the governor of Texas completely reversed his devastating lockdown policies and repealed all of his emergency powers along with the egregious attacks on rights and liberties. Well, not exactly. Not exactly. Because, as he points out here, towns and cities and individual companies can still engage in COVID-related mischief, but at least they are no longer getting cover from the governor's office. And this is the key thing. They are getting cover from the governor's office. The governor did this, I said, it would make absolutely no difference if he didn't prohibit the local jurisdictions. And if he didn't prohibit businesses from locking off public accommodations to people. And he'd already realized that. At the very beginning of this pandemic, they put in broad rules in terms of social distancing and people meeting in groups, and it essentially shut down churches. And you had churches who were meeting in defiance of that. And you had local authorities who were threatening pastors with arrest and fines and so forth and harassing people. And because he didn't want to have the political capital that he had with conservatives to be destroyed, he intervened directly and said, you will not enforce these rules on churches. Now, why isn't he doing that? And he shut down local governments who were doing that. Why isn't he doing that now with local governments who are still enforcing the mask? This is nothing more than a political ploy by Abbott, by Reeves in Mississippi and other Republican governors because they don't want to take the heat. They've seen, and they did this immediately after CPAC, where people cheered DeSantis and Kristi Noem of Florida and South Dakota because they stood up to these ridiculous, ridiculous Fauci rules that we've never done for any pandemic, whether it's yellow fever or whether it is smallpox. Never have we done these types of things, and they've never worked. They attempted it to a small degree in some of the cities with a 1918 epidemic, and it made absolutely no difference whatsoever. And so you see that Abbott stopped the lockdown of churches. Abbott repealed mask requirements for people to vote in the election. But he is not standing for a freedom when he could stop these people from taking away our ability to meet in public. And again, he does that for churches, he does it for elections, but he won't do it now. He is pretending that he is on the side of freedom for a political purpose. Very cynical political move. And it's fooled a lot of people, frankly. Don't be fooled by that. After a year under lockdown, will our freedom survive the tyranny of COVID-19, writes John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. He said, it remains to be seen, however, whether our freedoms will survive the tyranny of the government's heavy-handed response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and therein lies the danger of the government's growing addiction to power. Remember the clip that I had from Doug Wilson, The Lust to Govern? And the idea that these people, like Nancy Pelosi, if you want to put a name on it, or Chuck Schumer, would rather preside over a crash than to have a back seat on a prosperous nation. As you pointed out in Milton's Paradise Lost, that Satan would prefer to rule in hell than to serve in heaven. This past year, under lockdown was a lesson in many things, but most of all, it was a lesson in how to indoctrinate a population to love and to obey Big Brother. What started off as an experiment in social distancing in order to flatten the curve and to not overwhelm the nation's hospitals or expose the most vulnerable to unavoidable loss of life scenarios quickly became strongly worded suggestions for citizens to voluntarily stay at home and strong-armed house arrest orders with penalties in place for non-compliance. Let me tell you, it was always about coercion from the beginning. And the people who did not see that, the people who refused to see it because of blind partisanship, the people who should have pushed back on this, it was always the executive orders. The executive orders unleashed the money. That's how the federal government always gets its way, is by bribing. So we do have a fellowman on the line. Okay, good. We're going to pause right here. We'll be right back have a real quick commercial for you. And you can see some more of the lies that have been told sold to you by corporations and governments. And then we'll be talking to fellow McAleer about the movie that they're trying to get resources for, My Son Hunter, about the Biden crime family. We'll be right back.
How often does your job call you out of bed in the middle of the night? Well, if you were a doctor, it would be often. And generally, there isn't much time to spare.
Coffee, doctor?
Oh, fine. Have a Camel with your coffee.
Thanks.
You know, this night work's kind of rough, isn't it?
That's right. But a Camel's always a pleasure.
Yes, folks, the pleasing mildness of a Camel is just as enjoyable to a doctor as it is to you or me. In a nationwide survey, doctors in all branches of medicine were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" The brand named most was Camel's. Tens of thousands of doctors, general practitioners, surgeons, specialists, doctors in every branch of medicine were included. And according to this nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Try Camels yourself, the cigarette so many doctors enjoy.
All right, and we're back, and we have on the line fellow McAleer, and I've talked to him. I've had the pleasure to talk to him several times, and he's done very important work. First, a book about Gosnell, and then a movie about Gosnell, and it was done as a courtroom drama, and it was stunning, very well produced, and now they are doing some crowdfunding to do another movie, this one about Hunter. It's called My Son Hunter. Thank you for joining us, fellow.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
You know, when I saw this, I went hysterical laughing because the picture that you've chosen for this, you see Hunter in the foreground, and Biden, and then the background, you see some pole dancers and everything. I said, well, maybe we should call it Son of Biden. You could just call it SOB. And you could say, you know, from lap dances to laptops, crimes and cover-ups. But you're trying to stop the cover-up. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, as a storyteller, as a human being, I just find the cover-up of the Hunter Biden story and the Biden family, crime family story, to be offensive. I don't particularly find Hunter Biden's behavior offensive. As people can hear, I'm Irish, and I'm in no position to make fun of people's addictions. We exported alcoholism all over the world. You know, if you want to laugh at someone's addiction, just step outside my house in Ireland. In fact, sit inside my house in Ireland. You'll see a lot of it.
That was something that Tucker Carlson said. He said, "I don't really want to." He says, "I know Hunter personally, and his heart really went out to him because of the addiction problems that he had." But this is something else too, because this also pulls in the guy who happens to be president, and it also pulls in the fact that the media memory hold this whole thing. A lot of corruption involved in this, not just addiction.
Yeah. No, I mean, memory hold, you're being too kind there, David, to the media. Memory hold, they suppressed this. Yeah. This was historic. This wasn't, they didn't cover it, or they covered it hypocritically, or they treated Hunter different from, say, the Trump's sons. Yeah. This, they actually suppressed this. Big media and big tech. So the big tech, Twitter stopped you sending it around. Facebook stopped you sending it around. Twitter suspended the New York Post account for 17 days because of this.
Yeah.
Journalists attacked other journalists for covering this story.
And it was the middle of an election, and that's why they were doing it. I mean, it was it was very, very partisan election interference directly.
Complete election interference. And it just got me in my gut that it was like, here's a story people don't want. They don't want you to know about. So when I hear that, I just think, well, that just means we have to tell this story then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. In one of the interviews that you did, you said you were hoping that maybe you could get Lawrence Fox. But, of course, this is a guy who's running now for mayor. I've played his campaign video that he put together, a stunning speech about the effects of lockdown and how we got to get our lives back. I remember just a gut punch of a line there that we have to stop this. We never should have anybody having to say their final farewells to a dying loved one over an iPad. He would be a great, I don't know what's going on with his political campaign, but he would be a good person to do that. Well, what other things are possibilities for this, My Son Hunter film?
Well, I mean, it's very serious. We've spoken to Lawrence Fox a couple of times, and he's very keen to play the role. He's running for mayor of London. You know, I don't want to wish him ill politically, but if he doesn't win the election, we're very confident that he'll be playing Hunter. And Lawrence is a great actor. People might know him from the Netflix series Victoria, where he played Lord Palmerston. He's got a long line of great acting roles, and he's from a long line of acting family. His father, Robert Fox, was an actor. Edward Fox played the British officer in every British war movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he was in The Day of the Jackal, Edward Fox. I mean, he's a great, so he's got this long pedigree of acting. We also have, and I can't say who, we have an Oscar-winning actor who's interested in another role, let's just say a very interesting role. So we have real interest in it. But, you know, Hollywood, this is the movie that Hollywood doesn't want you to see, big tech doesn't want you to see, and big media doesn't want you to see. So we're crowdfunding for it, but people have really stepped up to the plate. And that's been a very, very, it's been heartwarming to see people not wanting to take it. They're not going to take it anymore. And we did this before. We raised $2.3 million for the Gosnell movie, 30,000 people. We've been on the air now about 10 days, maybe almost 2 weeks. We've raised 500,000, but we need to keep going. You know, people, you know, be a producer, you know, fight back. This is what we're doing.
Tell people where they can find this. Again, you're crowdfunding for this. You got 2.3 million so that you could make Gosnell, and you did. That was totally done by crowdfunding. So you're doing it again with this one. About the same amount of money, slightly more. You're looking for 2.5 million to do this production. And I got to say, anybody that hasn't seen the movie Gosnell, had Dean Cain, great cast, very professionally done, very, very important film, and they took something that was very grisly and stayed away from that aspect of it, but still got to the heart of the ethical issues on it. That's why I really highly recommend Gosnell, and that's why I'd like to see this film made. Tell people how they can find you in terms of crowdfunding, support this.
Yeah, go to mysonhunter.com. People have been going there and helping. And you're right, we stayed away from the grisly parts of Gosnell, and we told a courtroom drama. And that's very important. That's what conservatives need to do. They need to make romantic comedies. And the message must be part of the romantic comedy. It cannot supersede. It cannot be preachy. You have to make genre movies. People watch genre movies. They watch romantic comedies. They watch comedies. They watch thrillers. They watch courtroom dramas. They love crime. And we made Gosnell into a procedural. Objection, Your Honor. I'll see both parties in my chamber now. You know, you got to win this court case. And all this, just the stuff you normally see. But in that story was an amazing story, again, of a media cover-up. And again, of a political cover-up. So that's why we know the people will come on board and will help us, because we make quality movies, actually. It's one thing we really like to do.
And that was a key thing, too, in the movie. It was kind of a turning point in the film where you have, and this actually happened with a jury, we had the jury had to be supportive of abortion. And the as the defense was brought in, or the maybe the prosecution, I don't know which side brought in an expert about abortion. Talk about that when the abortion expert defined comfort care, which is what everybody was shocked about with Governor Northam in Virginia. But this is something that really came out and was ignored by the press in the Gosnell trial, and you pointed that out. Talk about that.
Yeah, no, that this is one of the reasons we made this film, was this exchange in the courtroom. So the prosecution brought the good abortion doctor to prove this is what a good abortion is, a legal abortion is, this is what Gosnell did. And when the woman started talking, the guy started talking at the time, the jury were sort of going, well, that sounds pretty similar to what Gosnell was doing. So they asked this abortion doctor, who had done 40,000 abortions in their career, and you can read the transcript, 40,000 abortions. And they asked this doctor, what is your, you know, what's the procedure if a child's born alive? And the doctor wouldn't answer, and they were forced to answer. And they says, we will put the child aside, give it comfort care, and eventually it will pass. Right? And that was just shocking to me. Everyone, and then, and the journalists, all the few journalists were there, all looked at each other, and they were going, did she just say that they would set aside a baby and let it die of dehydration and neglect? And it's like, Gosnell, you know, as the defense lawyer says, Gosnell at least dispatched his babies quickly. He murdered them quickly, as opposed to letting a baby die. Sorry for laughing, right? But, you know, it's madness. It's complete madness.
It is.
And so then when, if you look at Governor Northam of Virginia, and he talked about making the baby comfortable. He spoke. One thing that people didn't notice was he was speaking really casually about that.
Yeah.
He was speaking like it was, because it is a casual thing in the medical world, because it is accepted medical practice. People didn't know it. The first people to call for his resignation after the KKK pictures came out were Planned Parenthood, because Governor Northam let the cat out of the bag and told people what they weren't supposed to know. Yeah. They supported his campaign. They gave him millions to get elected. Once he started blowing the cover of comfort care, then he had to go. So,
well, it shocked the nation when he did that, and yet it was you know, the Gosnell trial showed that this had happened quite some time before, that they had successfully covered it up, and so I'm really looking forward to you know, what revelations you might have in this Hunter Biden thing. And of course, as you point out, this is a story that is international in its scope. This is the type of thing that you would think Hollywood would be all over this. I mean, they love to do movies about depravity, political corruption, drug abuse, and all this. You would think that this would tick every one of the boxes of Hollywood, but you got people in Hollywood that are afraid to be associated with this, right?
Look, it's a wonderful story, and I say that as a journalist. No, we journalists are different. We look at these kind of stories as with almost enthusiasm. You know, it's got I call it Austin Powers meets King Lear meets House of Cards. You know, I mean, we're going to film it in Serbia during the summer, because I believe apparently Serbia has a lot of strip bars and attractive women, and no story about Hunter Biden would be complete without strip bars and attractive women. but this is a guy, right, who joined the Navy, and the first day was thrown out because he had more cocaine in his system than the population of Bogota. And, you know, this is a guy who got $3 million from the mayor of Moscow's wife. This is a guy, you know, who has been in and out of rehab. This is a guy who's got all these incidents with guns. But this is the guy when Burisma, the Ukrainian oil and gas company, did an executive worldwide search for the best executive to be on their board. They decided they wanted the drug addict who got the stripper pregnant while getting thrown out of the Navy and was having an affair with his brother and with his brother's widow whilst he was still married, and then sexting her sister also. I mean, and then you got the president of the United States involved. I mean, I told a famous director in Hollywood who wants to remain nameless what we were doing. And he leaned back and he says, I'm not getting involved. I'd love to, but I'm not getting involved. I want to work. And he goes, but you know what? I says, well, tell us what you think of the story. And he goes, and he leaned back and he closed his eyes and he goes, you know what? Ultimately, Hunter Biden hates his father. Huh. Right?
Yeah.
He says, that's why the laptop was left for a year, because he wanted it to be discovered.
Yeah.
He says, Bo was the chosen son. Wow. Hunter was the Prince Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right. That's right.
And there's this tension between father and son all along the way growing up. He's trying to impress his father. His father knows he's an addict. And what does his father do? What does his father do to his son who's an addict? He uses him as a bag man
yeah.
to get the money so he gets the 10% or the 50% or whatever the cut of the deal is.
Boy, that's telling, isn't it?
You know,
And yet we get this image of from the press, we get this image of Biden as this kindly old grandfatherly guy. I mean, that's not the Biden that I've known for decades. The Biden that I've known for decades is one of the most authoritarian anti-civil liberties guy. And as you point out, he uses his son, who is a drug addict, as a bag man. That is absolutely true. And of course, his son, talking about how his son hates the father because he was rejected, talked about how he had to give 10% to the big guy, right?
Yeah, that's right. No, this is the email. 10% to the big guy. Tony Bobulinski, his business partner, who's CC'd on that email, says the big guy was Joe Biden, right?
Yeah.
But no one's asked him that at these press conferences. Are you? Who's the big guy? Is this email? By the way, let's start at the beginning. Is this email genuine? That's a simple question to ask everyone CC'd on that email. Is it genuine?
Mm-hmm.
And then ask the players, who's the big guy? Is it Joe Biden? If not, who is it? Who's in for 10%? Because nobody objected at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, you called Joe Biden a grandfatherly figure, right?
Yeah.
In the media. Joe Biden is a grandfather. Joe Biden has a grandchild he has never met and has never acknowledged. Wow. Hunter got a stripper pregnant. These are the progressives. They're supposed to believe in anything goes and we don't care and nuclear family is so outdated and all and we can have children here and children there. Well, but acknowledge your grandson, Joe Biden. Acknowledge your grandson.
Hmm. Yeah, of course, we saw the same type of thing with the Clintons. His illegitimate son, Danny Williams, who's, you know, even though that would be something that would probably, work to their credit that he'd have an illegitimate black child.
Yeah.
They basically gave him a stiff arm. So this is what these people do. It's an amazing story. It's even more amazing that as it checks all the boxes that Hollywood would typically love to do, a very complex story and very pertinent story, and it's a story that Hollywood won't touch. The media has done everything to suppress it that they can, and it will be an amazing video if you guys are a film, if you guys are able to pull this off, and I hope you can. So you're about a fifth of the way through right now. And people can go, your website is mysonhunter.com, is that it?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay, people can find the link there to the crowdsourcing to help fund this. And I really want to see this movie made, and I think a lot of people do, especially based on your history. I mean, it's not just the film Gosnell. You also did the FBI Love Letters, which I haven't seen that one, but I've seen excerpts from it. We had Dean Cain reading the transcripts back and forth between Strzok and Page, the two FBI lovers. A brilliant idea. And you guys, I know, could make a brilliant film out of My Son, Hunter. I really hope this gets done. Thank you so much for joining us, Helen.
Well, thanks, David. I always love coming on your show, and I always get a great response. So
great.
We'll be keeping you updated.
Yes.
Maybe you might have a role in the film yourself. I can see you as the...
I don't want to spoil it for you, but
a degenerate East European academic who's now trolls the strip bars of Eastern Europe, the young Hunter. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they won't let me fly anymore because I won't get the vaccine or wear a mask, so I'm kind of grounded wherever I am. Who knows? Without in a short period of time, I can't go to national parks now because of Biden. So I don't know where I'll be able to go. You come to my living room.
Our worlds are getting funny as the globalist agenda emerges. Our worlds get smaller.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's getting real small. It's like the size of my living room right now.
Yeah. It's very interesting, isn't it? Globalism.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely,
hates,
it is.
Freedom.
Yeah.
It's liberty. It's very interesting.
It's a horrific thing. Yeah. That's another movie for you.
The more globalist we get, the less diversity we have, actually, interestingly enough.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I've said that many times. I said that about Europe. When I went there in the early 70s after graduating high school, between my graduation and beginning college, I went with a group of people that were music, and we went to all these different countries. And it was so amazing how diverse the culture was. and the architecture, the language, the music, everything different. And very small areas, yes, compared to what we're used to here in America. And now what they're doing in the name of diversity, they're just graying everything down into this uniformity that's just so sad to see all this culture disappearing. I mean, to a large extent, it's also happened here in America in my lifetime. We used to have very strong regional differences that have now been subsumed under this monolithic media that's been imposed on everybody. And so that's really kind of what's happening. It's coming from media, from government, and all of the world is just going into this one gray culture that's not really a very interesting culture. It's got a lot of chains on it, too.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, you could get on a train in Europe and in a couple of hours be somewhere completely foreign. Completely different to where you've just been.
I know. Yeah, and you can still see it in the architecture, and I'm sad that I won't be able to see that anymore, but it looks like that's going to be the way it's going to be. And unless people have had enough of it, that's what it's going to take. People are going to have to
maybe we should start secret travel for the vaccine free.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be a pariah. Yeah. I'll be a pandemic pariah. That's going to be I'll go from non-essential to a pandemic pariah. Well, thank you so much. I know you've got to go, and I really appreciate you making time for us on the schedule. Phil McAleer, and people can find out how to support that film, mysonhunter.com. Thank you very much, Phil. And good luck.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
All the best.
All right, bye-bye. Bye. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back, and we're going to finish up on what is happening to the lockdown. And we got a little bit more news to give you an update on with the lockdown, and so stay with us. We'll be right back. Here's some more propaganda commercials.
You know, this was me 5 years ago, and it's still me. As I confess, I'm a waistline watcher from way back. Well, that's enough for today. Now for a lively lift. Ice-cold Coca-Cola. There's no waistline worry with Coke, you know. Actually, this individual-sized bottle has no more calories than half a grapefruit. Another thing, the cold, crisp taste of Coke is so satisfying, it keeps me from eating something else that might really add those pounds. Coke's a natural, wholesome blending of pure food flavors. I guess that's why everyone likes the refreshing new feeling you get, only from not-too-sweet Coca-Cola. And no wonder. Lively, lifty Coca-Cola provides a welcome bit of quick energy between meals. Makes for a pleasant pause in a busy day. Oh, and remember, Coke is low in calories, too. Say, now, don't you get any thinner.
All right. And just so you remember, media and corporations were telling you that Coke makes you thin. I mean, I guess if you take in enough sugar, it has just the opposite effect with the quantity. It's kind of like the modern monetary theory, right? If you spend enough money, you don't go into debt. You don't go bankrupt. And so if you drink enough Coke, you get thin. The same idea. We were talking before the interview about the comments of John Whitehead at the Rutherford Institute. And this is a key point here, folks, that I was saying from the very beginning. And I had so many people angry with me last year, listeners and people, especially on social media. People still get very angry with me on Gab if I talk about the fact that Trump was at the seminal part of this lockdown. But pay attention to what John Whitehead has to say. He said, the seeds of this present madness were sown several decades ago when George W. Bush stealthily issued two presidential directives that granted the president the power to unilaterally declare a national emergency. You see that? The idea that you can declare a national emergency, which he goes on to say, loosely defined as, quote, any incident, regardless of location, that results in extraordinary levels of mass casualties, damage, or disruption, severely affecting the U.S. population, infrastructure, environment, economy, or government functions. This is all part of the continuity of government plan. And this is also part of the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, Homeland Security. They folded in things like immunity for the pharmaceutical companies, Eli Lilly, the Lilly writer, saying, if you pull us into this pandemic thing, you're going to give us legal immunity for the products that we sell, right? And of course, Eli Lilly, kind of the point man legislatively as lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. And who was it that President Trump brought in as his HHS head? Well, it's none other than the CEO of Eli Lilly, Alex Azar. But it is this national emergency that laid the legal groundwork for the governors to do whatever they wanted to do and to do it forever. But it also, the second part of declaring the national emergency was to release money. You've seen this over and over again. You know that whenever there's a natural disaster, you have a hurricane or you have tornadoes come through an area or something like that, the first thing they want is for the president to declare a national emergency because that releases all kinds of money. And this national emergency was unlike any other national emergency in terms of the amount of money that was released. The government always gets what it wants by bribing the states. The federal government always bribes the states to get what they want. So those two aspects of those executive orders declaring a national state of emergency that are still in effect and that Biden has now built upon, those are the things that were the seminal part of this lockdown, and that came from President Trump. But of course, everybody said it's just the Democrat governors, and you're nothing but a Trump derangement syndrome. You just hate Trump. No, I hate what he did. I hate what he did. The role of the COVID lockdowns in 2020's homicide surge from the Mises Institute. And of course, we've seen with these two shootings that happened in a week, you've got all these trolls out there saying, well, I guess we're getting back to normal and now people are killing each other with guns. No, no, no. There's been a massive surge in homicides throughout the lockdown because of the lockdown. In the same way that we had this massive election corruption because of the lockdown. It enabled and it intensified all of the crooked dealings that happened. That lockdown for the election. And of course, it has enabled and intensified all of the suicides and the abuses, physical abuse and drug abuse. According to the FBI's preliminary uniform crime report for the first half of 2020, murder and non-negligent manslaughter offenses increased by 14.8%. Aggravated assault offenses were up by 4.6%. See, this is the effect of the lockdown. And so when you see these shootings that are happening out, it's not the gun. It's the executive orders. It's the lockdown. It's the fake pandemic. An Alberta politician in Canada, government made a mistake in not listing religious practice as essential during the COVID lockdowns. Yes, that was a mistake. But here's the bigger mistake that he doesn't see, that he doesn't confess to. And he's saying this in Alberta because this is the site of where the pastor James Coates was arrested and kept in jail, I think, for about a month. Before he's released, maybe a little bit over a month. They were going to keep him in jail for another 2 months. And finally, they relented because it looked bad. And for the same reason that Greg Abbott relented on the masks on churches, because there's a limit, they understand, as to what you will put up with. And if they get you angry, you have the power to stop this. And so they don't want you getting too angry. This is where the boiling of the frogs comes in. I mean, it's amazing how fast and how far they went in terms of taking our liberties away and how people were complicit with that. But they understand that there's certain areas that if they go into that area in terms of getting too rough with churches, that it will backfire on them. And it certainly did backfire on them with Pastor James Coates. This politician from Alberta says, and this is an article from LifeSite News, I think one of the things that governments, one of the mistakes that governments all around the world made at the start of this thing a year ago now, was not to define religious practice, spiritual freedom, as an essential part of our life and our way of life. This is a guy with the United Conservative Party. He said, you know, we are in a situation now where we can only have 10 people at a wedding, but the next day there could be 50 people at a funeral. And the day after that, there could be 150 people. In the communication, it has been forgotten how important our spiritual health is. Our mental health is our physical health and our economic health. And I'm absolutely a believer in freedoms of all kinds, our freedom of expression and our freedom of speech and our freedom of religion Absolutely. He said, I think almost all of us are suffering from COVID fatigue, information overload. And yet, his approach here is one of pragmatism. If you listen to what he had to say, he's not saying that, you know, I agree with what he's saying. I think that religious practice is essential. But what he is saying is that they need to be wiser in terms of what they say is essential and non-essential. And again, they don't have that determination. They should not be able to make that determination. How dare them say that this activity over here is essential and that one is not? You don't have that power under the Canadian Charter. You don't have that power under the U.S. Constitution, and you should never be given that power. And that power has to be taken away from you. Now. Now, folks. Not longer. The longer we wait, the harder this is going to be. Because these people who lust after power above all else are feeding on this. They're feeding on the fear. And they're getting an army of people who have bought into this. And the longer this goes, the worse it's going to get. So we have to understand that even the best of our politicians at this point are selling pragmatism, not principle. This politician goes on to say, he says he's not been afraid to speak his mind and has consistently advocated for a rational approach to lockdown. No. A regional approach to lockdown. Well, regional or rational, it doesn't matter. Lockdown doesn't work. It was clear from the very beginning, lockdown was not going to work. Lockdown was the Chinese virus. There is no pandemic. The virus is the lockdown. You can't say that the lockdown is going to be good for this activity, but not for religious activity. You can't say the lockdown is going to be good if we do it regionally, or if we do it practically, or if we only do it to people after they've had an access and ability to get their vaccines, as Nigel Farage was doing. This is how we're being betrayed by these pragmatist politicians who, above all else, hold their political careers above all of this, who have completely abandoned all principles of liberty and individual freedom and dignity. And again, making this kind of pragmatic aspect to it. Lockdowns have devastated. Here's one example. The cruise industry. I never thought I would be standing in a food line for hours. Just the degradation of it. You say to yourself, wow, am I really at this point? Says James Cox, a 50-year-old porter in the cruise industry. He told that to the Wall Street Journal. He used to earn $27 an hour. But since the lockdown began last year, his ability to earn in his chosen profession has been taken from him. These Democrats who say, well, we need everybody to earn $15 an hour. This is a guy who was making twice that. And they just took that away from him. Instead, as Real Clear Markets points out, the political class that gave us the post office, Amtrak, Social Security, and other would-be bankrupt entities decided on its own that cruise operators should not be allowed to adjust to seemingly new corona reality. That's right, because this is never about a virus. This was never about making adjustments. This was never about treating, because it never was about a disease. It was about power. We've had therapeutics kicked out of our hands. We've been told that we're non-essential. Indeed, how tragic for all business sectors that a particularly prosperous one wasn't allowed to show how it would meet customer needs during a notably fraught time. And I remember, again, going back to the Diamond Princess, that ship that was stranded off the coast of Japan. They had a lot. That was a worst case scenario. And I pointed that out from the very beginning of this so-called pandemic. I said, if that's the Diamond Princess that they were freaking everybody out about, I said, that's the best example of why this is not dangerous. You had a situation where, as it was stationed off the coast of Japan, you had a guy who was a doctor, a virologist, who had worked in all these real pandemics in Africa with Ebola and other cases. And he said he went on that cruise ship and he was never more afraid of anything in his life, because he believed at the time that we were dealing with a very deadly virus. And he said no precautions were being taken. No precautions were being taken on the Diamond Princess. You had about 12 people who died eventually over a period of time. And I forget exactly what the numbers were, but it was only about 40% of the people who actually tested positive. Of those, there was a very, very small percentage of people who actually got sick. And there were 12 people who died. And this was on a cruise ship where everybody was held up together in close quarters. There was no isolation. There were no sanitary procedures. There was common food that was being, and servers who were delivering. You know, they'd then been eating in a common area as people do on cruise ships, food lines and so forth, and buffets. And I said, if that's as bad as it gets with a population that is elderly and typically not in good shape, that was certainly what I saw on the cruise that I was on. And a lot of people who were barely mobile, but they were somehow able to get to the feeding trough and to spend long hours at the feeding trough. Very unhealthy situation that had nothing to do with any virus. But to see how few people got sick and how few people died out of the 1,000 or so people there, 1 or 2,000, I forget how many. I forget the numbers now. I could rattle them off a year ago, and I talked about it many times. But that was an example showing that, you know, the worst-case scenario is supposed to be the cruise ships, and that's how they scared everybody. And you remember, after a while, and after this doctor who went on board said, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. There's no sanitary isolation here of anything. After a while, they took the people off the cruise ship and then just sent them home regularly, and everybody was saying, this is it. It's going to be, you know, this is a super spreader event. These people who were on the cruise ship, now they're going to be spreading this everywhere. None of that happened. That ship, which was used as one of the key things to scare people to death, was, if you looked at the actually what happened, one of the best proofs against this being a pandemic. Now, Governor DeSantis in Florida is threatening a lawsuit against the CDC if it refuses to let cruises resume soon, because this is a big part of the Florida economy. Most of the cruises are leaving from Florida. He appeared alongside the Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody and leaders of Carnival, Royal Caribbean, Disney, and Norwegian Cruise Lines at Port Canaveral news conference on Friday to make the case for lifting the no sail order from the CDC. CDC has been able to tell people you're not going to be able to evict people who aren't paying your rent. I mean, where did they get the authority for that? Again, CDC is a private organization like the Federal Reserve, and they have assumed godlike powers under Trump that are continuing under Biden to do these types of crackdowns that tell people what they can and cannot do when they travel, what they can and cannot do in terms of even evictions. And so he said, this is what DeSantis said about the CDC. They did the no-sale order in March of 2020. And it's never been really to the point where they're making an effort to get it back. This has a kind of ripple effect throughout all businesses. When they're sailing, there's more economic opportunity for people across a wide range of businesses, and it affects a lot of jobs, and what we need is a way forward. No. This is not about a way forward. This is not about it ever ending. This is about them taking us further and further down. Massive crowds continue to gather in Miami despite the APM restrictions. And, of course, they worked very hard to threaten people. And the news reports were very excited about the fact that they were able to intimidate people. No, they should all be dead by now, right? Why aren't they dead by now? We were told this about the Sturgis motorcycle rally in South Dakota. Remember that? Oh, yeah, you got 500,000 people coming in for the big motorcycle rally, and everybody's going to die. That didn't happen. Didn't happen with CPAC. Didn't happen with spring break. But now, of course, as I pointed out last week, it's an offense to leave England. You'll get a fine of $5,000, about 7,000 U.S. dollars, 5,000 pounds, about 7,000 U.S. dollars, if you try to leave. And they find out about that. The only people who are making out big time with this are the usual suspects. The three big tech billionaires who top the list of pandemic profiteers. People like Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. Yet the Senate Republicans allow the fraudulent Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, to continue. A bill extending the Paycheck Protection Program from March the 31st to May the 31st, likely to be signed by President Joe Biden in the coming days, but Senate Republicans could have ended the program, known to be littered with fraud and incentivization for authoritarian lockdowns to continue, but by a vote of 92-7, the Senate approved of the extension. That means that a vast majority of Republicans, as a matter of fact, there's only six Republicans who voted against it. Ben Sasse is the reason that totals up to 99 because Ben Sasse was not there, but you had people voting against it. Mike Crapo, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Jim Risch, and Richard Shelby. They were the only ones who voted against extending this program, which, as Rand Paul outlined, a group applied for 90 loans from the program for over $24 million, and at least 42 of these fraudulent PPP loans were approved and funded for approximately $17.5 million. Even worse, only 5% of the companies got more than 50% of the money. Yep, they're PPPing down our back, and they're telling us it's raining. It's not raining. There's no pandemic. And you need to understand that these are corporations selling this to you. They don't care as long as they can make money. I'm going to play for you a Ford Pinto commercial just to remind you that it's not just pharmaceuticals. Of course, Ford had legal liability for that. Pharmaceutical companies have no liability for the damage that they do to you, the vaccines. See if you catch the little moment here where they talk about the Pinto and the fact that it has a surprise in the back. That might be the exploding gas tank, but we don't know. And I'll just tell you as we're heading out, please take a look at The David Knight Show. You can support us through PayPal, David Knight Show at Proton Mail. You can send payments through PayPal, or we have a direct link at thedavidknightshow.com to PayPal as well as to Subscribestar. At Subscribestar, you can also give us individual tip, they call it, or you can subscribe and sign up for a recurring payment from $5 up. Whatever you would like to do. And so we really do appreciate your support. You can also find links to Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, as well as our P.O. Box and all of our the places where you can find the program. We've now added Spreaker to the podcasts, and we added last week Rumble and Odyssey to the video sites. So now we have four video sites, BitChute, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. And so you'll find the links to where you can find the live stream broadcast. And remember, pay attention to the live stream broadcast because the live streams will be stopping on Twitter. So Periscope is going away. But we'll still have the links on a daily basis to DLive and to Trovo. So you'll be able to find the links to all the different podcast locations, the video locations, the live stream locations, as well as to where you can support us at thedavidknightshow.com. And we should have a website up in about 2 weeks where we'll start to put articles and other links to the actual videos we'll have residing there, as well as a continually playing video and audio at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for joining us. And here's a reminder of how corporations will sell you anything.
Announcing the new Pinto three-door runabout. Pure Pinto, front to back. With an extra surprise. Bringing up the rear. Up goes the third door, and the new Pinto runabout packs more fun than any little import. It's the little car with the 5-foot trunk, the Pinto three-door runabout. The third door makes packing simple and easy. Deep pile carpeting is standard in the front and rear area, and with the rear seat up, there's room for four. New Pinto three-door runabout. Easy to pack, easy to pay for. Pinto is built to go and go and go. See the new Pinto three-door runabout at your Ford dealer. Packs more fun than any little import. Pinto, the little carefree car from Ford.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.